with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome to Tuesday. About a minute and a half past the hour as we begin this Tuesday night edition of The Horn. The Horn having kicked off earlier with Guy James at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, and how good it was to have Guy back. Miss him when he's gone, and The Horn is so much better when he's here. No getting around it. Welcome back, Guy. I know you were missed, and I know you missed being behind the mic. So, today being any day, I want a reminder. Yeah, there we go. Guy and I will be live from Washington, D.C. on October the 29th, broadcasting the proceedings of a one-day conference hosted by the Campaign for America's Future. And we will bring all the discussion live. And then a special two-man roadshow that afternoon, we hope. That's the plan. That's the 29th of October, live, The Horn, on the road from Washington, D.C. I look forward to every opportunity I get to work with Guy James. When you get to work with a pro, you know you've worked with a pro, and you relish the opportunity. That's really what it boils down to. So that's that'll be on us quick. That's a week from Thursday. It will, of course, be brought to you in part by Coal River Mountain Watch. So be on board for that. Special afternoon broadcast Thursday afternoon. All day Thursday, really. All day Thursday from Washington, D.C. Where to go? How about we start out with a little bit of humor? You know, if you were listening to the program last night, you heard our good friend Laurella Scarborough talking about the meeting with Governor Joe Manchin of West Virginia yesterday, in which he's renamed the state. Damned if he hasn't. He really, really has. Our flag says Montani, Semper, Liberi, Mountaineers are always free. Not so much. But more than that, you know, almost heaven, West Virginia was on, it used to be wild, wonderful West Virginia. Wild, wonderful West Virginia on our license plates and on the signs coming into the state. When Joe Manchin took over, he changed that on all the state signs coming into the state. West Virginia, open for business. And now, as of yesterday, he has declared that we are no longer the mountain state. We are the extraction state. So some of us started brainstorming earlier, and you are welcome to jump in on the fun. Rory McElmoyle said along something that had been sent to him earlier today that I got to look at, and it was an image of a proposed bumper sticker, just to sort of drive this point home of exactly what. Of what a mockery Governor Manchin has made of West Virginia. And it was West Virginia, the extraction state. And that got me thinking, as you know I am wont to do. And just sort of, brainstorming based on that extraction state bumper sticker, the original bumper sticker. I'm looking for it now. The original bumper sticker said, "Welcome to West Virginia, the extraction state," and showed a photograph of a mountain being blown up. But that then got my brain going. And I started thinking, you're sitting in the movie theater and they get ready to play all the trailers and it says coming attractions? Well, in West Virginia, it's coming extractions. Or maybe we could double up on what Joe did with the wild, wonderful West Virginia and make it the extraction state is open for business. And then I got to thinking about the fact that tourism really, tourism to the beautiful places in West Virginia really is, and in Appalachia, really is Appalachia's future. The extraction of fossil fuel-based energy is not. And with that in mind, I got to thinking about the fact that, you know, continuing to rape Appalachia for profit, not so much for coal as it is for profit. But continuing to rape Appalachia for profit will, of course, ultimately destroy, devastate, kill, eliminate our growing tourism industry. And you know how, anybody who's ever driven around the Southeast at some point in time has seen a barn or a sign that says, "See Rock City, see Seven States, see Ruby Falls." That kind of stuff. And that is, of course, a tourist attraction. But when you consider what mountaintop removal does to Appalachia and the fact that it kills the tourism industry, well, then I got to thinking, mountaintop removal. An Appalachian tourist extraction. So feel free to brainstorm. Send them along. Send your thoughts along to bobkincaid@gmail.com. bobkincaid@gmail.com. This already rolling in from Michael Kid A from the chat room. Could we change the West Virginia State song to Nirvana's Rape Me? There's a thought. We could always put it out there for the audience's consideration. If somebody could send that along, I'll be happy to play it. I don't have it. I don't. I'm sorry. It's not in my geezer music library. That's a nice thought. Of course, I wanted to remake. I wanted to make Andrew McKnight's Company Town the new state song, because that thing always raises chills on the back of my neck, and it's a perfect depiction of what West Virginia has been made. Because really, with 500 Appalachian mountains gone, our official state song, "Oh, the hills, the beautiful hills, how I love those West Virginia hills," well, that's fast. Unless you want to change it to past tense, "how I loved those West Virginia hills," that's fast becoming an irrelevant tune. Oh, Susan, you the doggone it, Susan. News Ninja Susan, how about the extraction state? Welcome, dentists. That guy. Oh, goodness. So feel free to share those. Because you know what? When it comes right down to it, what we have is our... I was talking with someone the other night down in Chapel Hill about this. We do something that might cost $1,000 to pull together, or maybe even $10. the coal industry then spends, you know, a few million countering it. We're definitely getting more bang for our buck. Think about it. A few months back, down in North Carolina, near Chapel Hill, there was a wonderful concert called Mountain Aid. It was a dandy. And it didn't cost much. And the proceeds went to help end mountaintop removal. A couple of months later, what happens? Don Blankenship and Massey Energy have to organize their own, they organize an entire hate rally, and they pay top dollar to bring in, of all people, Ted Nugent and Sean Hannity Job, you know, the life support system for a haircut. And they bring in the tired, old, worn-out Hank Williams Jr., and they spend $1 million. And we got more bang for the buck. They had all kinds of corporate sponsors, but we had the fun. And I always think of that wonderful film, The Name of the Rose, with a very young, can't remember his name now, but Christian Slater. Young Christian Slater, and who else was in that? Was it Harrison Ford? Surely not Harrison Ford. But if you recall the film, it ultimately, and look, you know, go rent it or whatever. I'm going to spoil it. It all centers on the fact that some people in the medieval church were killing others because they were afraid of humor. Afraid of laughter. Because the one thing that the authoritarians and the serious people cannot counter is our laughter. And the one thing they cannot tolerate is being laughed at. And that reminded me of something that that I saw in the news the other day and wanted to kind of get started with this evening. And that's something that happened to the poor, beaten, and bedraggled U.S. Chamber of Commerce yesterday. And how precious this was. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce got, what is the official word in the modern argot? Punked. The Yes Men troop. Oh, it was beautiful. The Yes Men troop booked a press conference at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. And they announced that the Chamber of Commerce, pretending to be the Chamber of Commerce, they announced that the Chamber of Commerce had changed its stand on global warming. I think I've got the audio here.
Rachel Snyder, Express News. You said you no longer support the false climate solutions like carbon capture and sequestration. So you think this is something your members can get behind? There have been lots of members of the chamber have been touting clean coal as one of the main solutions that we need for climate change. So you think your members can stand behind that?
We do feel that the subsidies for clean coal that have been given by this administration are completely misplaced. And if the same amount were applied to solid, ingenious solar technologies that we already have, we would see a dramatic improvement over the long term and the short term, in fact. And that clean coal is a technology that has not only not been proven, it basically doesn't exist.
Wow. So there's not a lot of people in the room, but there are obviously some journalists there, and they're covering it. Now, this is, I believe, Andy Birkelbaum of the Yes Men, and Playing It Straight, oh, my God, not cracking a smile, not smirking, not, I can't believe that. No, just playing it straight up. Getting ready to spring the trap, as it were.
And it's just obvious we have to put our money, it's a sane business decision, we have to put our money where the proof is.
Okay, this is, I'm Eric Wolfslagle, I'm with the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. This is not an official U.S. Chamber of Commerce event, so
uh-oh.
I don't know what pretenses you're here. I know some of you in the press world, but this is a fraudulent press activity and a stunt.
Who are you?
So if you have any questions, you're welcome to direct them to me with the U.S. Chamber of Commerce.
Who are you really, sir?
And do you have a business card? Are you with the U.S. Chamber?
I do. We can discuss afterwards.
Okay. Can I see your business card?
Can I see yours?
Are you here representing the U.S. Chamber of Commerce?
Yes, I am.
Okay, well, I work there, and you do not look familiar to me at all.
Could I see your business card? Could I see your business card?
Are you interrupting? Yes, I am. This guy does not represent the U.S.
Can I see your business card? Who are you really with? Oh, see, these sad little authoritarian right-wingers are completely out of their depth when they deal with us and we're dealing with them in the realm of humor. Ha-ha! Bah!
U.S. Chamber of Commerce.
Can we finish the
okay? No. This is not an official Chamber of Commerce. This is not...
I'm on deadline.
Yeah, got it. So they're misrepresenting the U.S. Chamber of Commerce.
Sir, if you
if anyone has any questions or wants to talk to the real Chamber of Commerce, they can direct you can direct your questions to me.
So are you an expert?
What's your position?
If you would like to have a press conference, you can have your own press conference,
sir. What is your position?
But you can't come in here and barge in and interrupt our press conference.
What is your position?
I don't know what... Sorry?
What is your position at the Chamber of Commerce?
I just spoke my position.
What is your title and your official title at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce?
I'm the assistant to Mr. Donahue.
Okay. This guy is a fraud. He's lying. This is, you know, a stunt that I've never seen before.
I think this is the stunt.
So, does this mean that the Chamber of Commerce will not endorse, it is not acknowledging the climate change?
Whatever this gentleman here said to you today is irrelevant. It's not factual. This is a fraudulent press conference. Okay? He's misrepresenting the U.S. Chamber of Commerce.
So what is the position then? It has not changed. You said it is going to continue to be that there is no climate change. Is that correct?
I'm here to tell you that this is not a formal press conference by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce.
Yes,
we did hold a press conference last week with President Donahue of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce.
Right.
You'd like to get our position?
For
no,
you.
I'm with the U.S. Chamber of Commerce.
Do you have that?
Yeah, I do. So if you'd like to actually talk to the legitimate Chamber of Commerce, I've got my business cards outside. This gentleman, I will assure you, does not have any business cards, and he's not legitimate.
So, sir,
oh, well, if he doesn't have business cards, he's not legitimate. Now, I've got business cards, and I've got a pencil tucked behind my ear. That means I'm for real. Beautiful.
The Chamber of Commerce then that there is no, that climate change does not exist.
So, actually, this sign in sheet here.
I'm sorry, we have rented this room.
Yes.
You're going to have to refund us.
Fraudulently.
You know what, excuse me?
Under fraudulent. It's
sir,
fraud. It's illegal.
Sir, I don't know.
No, it's not.
What you're doing is illegal.
You're going to have to refund
no,
us.
No, it isn't.
This is very embarrassing for you.
Okay.
This is very embarrassing for you.
Come on outside,
please.
Thank you. There you are. There you are. Who are you?
I'm Kate Shepard.
With?
Mother Jones.
There you are.
Thanks.
Can we? Who are you with?
I'm with the
E&E. Sorry?
E&E.
Yes, got it.
Who are you? Who are you? Who are you?
Is there any form of...
The creep from the U.S. Chamber of Commerce actually barged over and committed a misdemeanor battery by committing an unconsented to touching of an insulting or provoking nature against one of the women there in the room, trying to grab for the sign-in sheet. Do you get a sense now for how threatened the authoritarian right is? Their fear is real. Now, granted, their motives are sleazy, but their fear is real. And what is their fear? Their fear is not for America. Their fear is not for the well-being of the planet or the country or anybody here except for that select, elect, the neo-Calvinist few that they believe are blessed by God to be rich, to be richer than Croesus. That's who Eric Wollschlegel represents. Wollschlegel! Oh, Gesundheit! Did we give up when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor? Wollschlegel! What did you say? Henceforward, they are on double secret probation, the yes men. This is delightful. And I hope that we find more ways to humiliate these people this way. Because it is a complete destruction of their idea base and a complete exposure of their fears. Fears for their own vested self-interest. Fears for their religious icon, Holy Prophet. Now, let's just finish this out and see what happens.
Let's see, do you have my ID?
No, it's our interns. We don't bring it with us.
Yeah, we kind of leave it wherever we...
Sir, who are you really? I actually cover the chamber. I know you don't work for the chamber. Who are you?
Well, who am I really?
Yes. What are you doing here? What is this event about?
This event is about what the only sane thing for the U.S. Chamber of Commerce to do, obviously. There is no way that a government body or a body with any public responsibility can have the stance that the chamber has had until now. The statements of late that the chamber has made in regard to climate science are frankly embarrassing for those of us who truly represent it. And unacceptable. And it's very obviously time for a change.
Right, but you came in here this morning saying you're with the Chamber of Commerce and you're not. Who are you?
Well, I represent the position that the Chamber of Commerce must take and the inevitable position that that it must take.
Oh, isn't it frustrating for the for-profit media, for the Johnny-on-the-spot Washington Press Corps, when they get punked, too? This is a win-win. The yes men dangled the line in the water without even putting a worm on the hook. And the sleazy, slippery bottom feeders of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce struck that hook and were reeled in like the suckerfish they are. Oh, that was beautiful. Just beautiful. And then the paranoia continued. Larry Kudlow, over at CNBC, wasn't satisfied with this just the way it was. Larry Kudlow over at CNBC, well, he saw more powerful forces at work.
Taking you to the next level.
To stop that thought right there, we want to go to Hampton Pearson. We've got some breaking news, Hampton.
But a reversal on climate change from the U.S. Chamber of Commerce.
Well, Trish, from the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, a news release basically saying the U.S. Chamber of Commerce is now getting ready to throw its weight behind strong climate legislation.
Breaking news right now, the Chamber of Commerce...
These are all clips from Fox, by the way. Oh, man, it was a double whammy. They suckered them in, too. Oh, I got big respect for these guys.
Saying it will reverse its position on the climate change bill and wants a carbon tax, if you will, in the Senate bill on climate change.
A spokesman for the chamber, President Tom Donohue, announcing today at the National Press
Club. Now, this is CNBC.
Quote, we believe that strong climate legislation is the best way to ensure American innovation, create jobs, make sure the U.S. and the world are on track to reduce global carbon emissions, and provide the needs of American business community for generations to come.
Remember, companies like Exelon and other power producers, primarily those on the nuclear side, left the U.S. Chamber of Commerce because the chamber opposed the climate change bill.
Now, this really is an about face for the chamber, and it comes after...
Okay, now bear in mind, this is Larry Kudlow again.
After, frankly, some major defections by the likes of PG&E, Apple, PNM Resources, and Exxon. But again, the chamber now saying, we believe the Kerry Boxer Clean Energy Jobs and American Power Act is a good start towards strong legislation.
All right, so the U.S. Chamber is denying it now. All right, so maybe not.
Some breaking news. Hanson, what is the latest?
Well, first of all, the Chamber of Commerce saying no change in its policy in opposition to the current climate legislation working its way through Congress. And the news item that we came on with earlier, frankly, according to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, is absolutely a hoax.
And they are denying that they are changing their position on climate change legislation.
Is there any involvement of the White House whatsoever?
There's Lawrence
I couldn't even begin to go there, Larry, on that one. Just thought I'd ask. Okay. Just thought I'd ask.
Cover all the ground you can. All right. We're going to leave it there. Thank you so much, Hanson, for updating us.
See, the beauty of this is for all the layers of BS that it uncovered and exposed. Because, you see, none of this could have ever happened if anyone had done any real, complicated word here, journalism. This exposes the fact that if you show up behind a podium and say you're somebody, that the Washington Press Corps will immediately take you at your word. That means that all they're really doing is stenography on press releases. You heard it there in the Fox and CNBC broadcasts. It was reported as fact without any fact checking. That's because in a 24-hour news cycle, there's no time for fact checking. Got to get it out there. That's why a three-car pileup on an interstate in Miami winds up being national news, even when there's not a missing white woman to go with it. This little piece of satire peeled back several ugly layers of what's wrong with media in this country. And they also made a mockery of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, too. You know, Reuters picked it up and ran with it. It's amazing. The PR machine of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce immediately swung into action after Eric Verschlegel publicly humiliated himself at the meeting. You know, I'm sure he makes good money, but every now and then they smear some more poo between those two slices of bread and say, yeah, here's your sandwich, Eric. You know, we give you the money, now you eat it. And he had to eat a big one. Yesterday in Washington, D.C. And they're mad. They're mad. You know, Volschlegel told reporters, it's a very sad day. And then Thomas J. Collamore of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. Now, this is the same outfit that, for instance, has run full-page ads in several states of the Union, including my own, decrying the judicial systems of those given states and calling them judicial hellholes. And they maintain a judicial hellhole list. Entirely made up of facts that they have twisted to suit their own ends. But now that someone has done it to them, well, they're upset. Thomas J. Collymore came out and had kittens with crocheted tails over what he called public relations hoaxes. And then he said, we want law enforcement authorities to investigate this event. Public relations hoaxes undermine the genuine effort to find solutions on the challenge of climate change. No, dumbass! You and your organization undermine the genuine effort to find solutions on the challenge of climate change because you don't even believe that climate change is real. You deny the facts. You deny the realities in front of your very eyes because you are blinded by gobs and gobs and gobs and gobs of corporate money that is dependent on continuing to poison the planet, our children, our future, our everything. That's the public relation. Public relations in general is hoaxery. It's flim-flam. These irresponsible tactics are a foolish distraction from the serious effort by our nation to reduce greenhouse gases. No. See, that's more PR. No, Mr. Collymore. The satire to which you were subjected are not a distraction. They are a spotlight on your dirty little organization and their efforts to distract from serious efforts within our nation among decent people, upstanding people, honorable people. In other words, liberals and progressives and Democrats and Greens. To do something about climate change before it does us in. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce has spent a king's ransom. Several king's ransoms, really. Hundreds of millions of dollars. On their own public relations hoaxes. Clean coal being one of them. Remember the faces of coal? Where do you think the idea for this came from? I don't know this for a fact. I'm openly speculating, and I admit it. But when the Federation of Americans for Coal Energy Solutions, faces of coal, came out with a bunch of stock photos that they bought online and said that those people in those photos were supporters of clean coal technology, that was a public relations hoax. And they got busted for it. So all the yes men did was turn around and did what the filth industry and its enablers like the U.S. Chamber of Commerce are already doing. But because these are a bunch of really humorless jerks, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and so forth, they couldn't take it. As the old playground saying goes, they can dish it out, but they can't take it. So, you know, little golf clap to the guys at the Yes Men, for one of the most brilliant pieces of satire to come down the pike in a long, long time. So that's how we get the program started this evening. It's about 25 minutes before the hour. And the phone lines are open. There's one blinking light that I'm going to in a minute. And then, you know, your thoughts on anything, not just this. Your thoughts. You know the number, 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, it's 304-658-3333. Too nervous to pick up the phone? Well, email works too, and you are more than welcome to do that. You can send email to Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com, and we will go to the phones now I believe we have, Horn intern junior grade Ferg told me correctly, we have Luke. You there, Luke?
I thought I was blinking light number one. I'm sorry.
You are blinking light number one.
Let's see. Two things on the Chamber of Commerce thing. One is, now, if they rented the room, unless they're in there holding human sacrifices, they could put on whatever they want to. They want to put on.
And it was their room. They had the right to have Eric Wurtschlager arrested.
I was going to say, if they want to put on a mime show, that was their right if they've rented the room. As long as they weren't doing a human sacrifice or something.
And you know what? I think it would. The video evidence is there. Eric Wurtschlager should be charged with battery, tried before a jury of American citizens in D.C., and hopefully convicted.
Well, and the other thing was, this was on Mr. Oberman's last night, but apparently something about the Chamber of Commerce where they've been claiming 3 million members or something, that it's turned out their membership is like 300,000.
Yeah, it's more of that conservative miracle math made easy, you know, like what they do by statute in Texas, where if your fundamentalist says 2 and 2 and then Jesus equals 5, it's 5.
Well, today on our local funding station, radio station, they had one of the fellows on from doing this new sort of Wikipedia thing, this thing where they're cleaning up the Bible, taking out all the liberal part of it. You have seen this thing where they're rewriting the Bible?
Yes, I did. And I love what they're going to make sure and remove, all that.
Well, I'm sitting there going, now, if you're taking out all the little part, well, does that mean we have to take Jesus out? Because, I mean, let's see now, fed the poor, hated money changers.
Right. Well, you know that one of the verses that they want to get rid of is that really, really troublesome one about it is easier for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than it is for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven. That's gone. And they want to rewrite that. In fact, Sue sent this along to me earlier today. They want to rewrite that verse as, let's see, where is it? Oh, here it is, yeah. He wants to change that to, he wants to change rich man to a man who cares only for money.
Because, of course, they're not that, no.
Right, because, see, that opens up poor people to have a hard time getting into heaven, too, because you know how it is with poor people. They're all the time worried about money because they got bills to pay and they ain't got no money to pay the bills with, so naturally they're.
I wanted to call into him this morning. I had an argument. I thought about it, and I just said, no, I'll never get through, but. If you hear them in your neighborhood, you know, on your neighborhood radio, and you want to get to them, call in here and go, so you're saying you have the right to edit God. So now you're saying you have the right to edit the Word of God. Now, I'm an agnostic, but I was raised in Southern Baptist, and I was beaten into my head, you know, the Bible was the Word of God.
The inerrant, inspired Word of God.
But now they're saying they have the right to edit God. And it just blows your mind when you sit there listen to these fundies talking about it, and you're just sitting there going, you know, anybody with a brain can take you down in 5 seconds. You know,
I also find it interesting that he wants to get rid of, and by the way, you know who's doing this, right?
Which one? No, which one's behind all this?
This is the Conservapedia rewrite of the Bible. It's being done by Phyllis Schlafly's son, Andrew.
Oh, there's a wonderful one.
Yeah, you know, you just feel sorry for him. I do. I feel sorry for him all his life being raised by that. Mm-hmm. Oh, that virago, that common scold, that. Yeesh.
Okay, two quick things for TV, just for the fun of it, just for in case anybody has out there wants to listen to it tonight or watch it. It's coming out on DVD, I think, sometime in the next couple of weeks. But I've been watching the Monty Python tribute over at IFC. It is hilarious. Where they've been doing the review, the 40th anniversary.
Oh, I didn't. Well, I don't have IFC, so.
Well, I was gonna say it's supposed to be coming out on DVD in the next week or two, so you could probably be able to rent it sometime soon. Other one, if you have Turner Classic Movies tonight. Are you an aficionado of Mr. Castle? Mr. William Castle?
Help me there.
Tonight, let's see. At 8 o'clock is Mr. Sardonicus. At 9:45 is Straightjacket. At 11:30 is The Tingler. At 1 a.m. is 13 Ghosts. Remember William Castle, who used to pull all the stunts in the theaters, where he'd have the lights flashing off and on? And
Okay. Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm a little...
I think it's William Castle.
I remember the stunts, yeah.
Yeah, where they used to have the, they'd have the nurse there, you had to... you can't leave in the last 5 minutes or
right.
whatever.
Right. And
so there were three or four of his fun with. The Tingler is fun like at 11:30 tonight. Vincent Price, it is wonderful. If you like that kind of movie. So, we'll get that.
Yeah, I remember those ads. It meant no one will be admitted or no one will be allowed to leave after the, before the, whatever
like
it was.
15 minutes or something like
yeah.
that. Yeah.
You will be, and it was the equivalent of a Carnival Midway Barker's pitch.
I mean, that's what
you means. Will be amazed. You will be sick and not for the faint of heart.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll tell you what else is not for the faint of heart. We'll get back into politics now. How dare we use Russia's own words against him? Dear God. Oh, my God. You know. The one today was over at Washington Post. Another one of their wonderful people who can't use the computer and type out the words Media Matters in the form of, I believe it's Carol Marcus, who does one of their things. And she just absolutely just went.
Wait, Carol Marcus? I thought she was one of Jim Kirk's love interests.
Well, hang on. It's Marcus, and I can't remember what her first name is. I apologize. I didn't write that part of it down. But she took this thing, just went off on the Obama administration. And then if you go over to Media Matters, they've got a nice little retort to it. Apparently she's never watched Fox News. From the way she reports it, so you're kind of sitting there going, yeah, it's like if you watch Sunday on Howie's Reliable Sources show, he had Michael Wilbon on, and it was amazing how they went over the one quote they'd given that was an error, and they said it was an error, but amazingly enough, during that whole thing, they couldn't mention any of those like over at Media Matters. I think they've got like 28 or 30 separate instances of showing Russ making racial comments. But on CNN, we couldn't bother talking about those, couldn't play any of those.
Well, Juan Williams explaining to Bill O'Reilly that the Crips and Bloods comment was a comment about violence and not about race.
Oh, yeah.
That was one for the ages.
Well, the one I liked was, did you see the one? Bello and his crack team, they couldn't find one example.
Not one.
Not one.
And I'm sensitive to this because they tried to do it to me over the Sylvia's restaurant comment.
Oh.
I went into Sylvia's, and even though it's run by Negroes, it was just like eating in a regular restaurant.
Oh! That's going to follow him for a while.
Well, yeah, right up. It's following in that parade of O'Reilly stuff right behind, we'll do it live!
Oh, that never telling anybody to shut up. Oh, yeah. Then they play the thing with his thing shut up like about 40 times in a row. Oh, God. Oh, no. Oh, let's see what else on our wonderful media. Oh, and the other thing is, have you noticed, if you watch anything on the mainstream media, when somebody wants to talk about Fox's homophobia on this whole Ken Jennings thing, that the minute anybody starts to mention it, oops, I'm sorry, we're out of time, we have to go now.
Oh, I caught Howie Kurtz, I guess it was 2 weeks ago or a week ago last Sunday, trying to talk past Anna Marie
Cox
when she tried to bring it up.
And he just went right over and pretended like he didn't hear a thing.
Yeah, didn't have time to talk about that, but later on he had time to talk about David Letterman.
Yeah, oh yeah. Oh, but like I said, it's amazing how they always want to compare Letterman to Ince, and I'm sitting there going, no, you compare Letterman to O'Reilly. It's like, if you want to say somebody about pushing somebody, what you say, was undue influence on an employee. Well, let's talk about a lady named Backus. Come on, let's have a talk. Because they'll like to on the phone. But we can't mention that. Have you noticed one thing about the mainstream media? They will go after, if she was still, they would go after Mother Teresa. They would go after, they would go after Jesus, if he were around. But if you tell them, say, we're going to go after Fox or one of the other networks, no, I'm sorry, we can't do that right now. We have to go on something else. There's a cat down a well. We have to cover that.
Right. And you know, your fellow Tennessean, David, wrote in when I said 24-hour news cycle, and it sort of goes along with what you just said. You know, kitten down a well, you know, Republican up a tree. No, that would be Republican in a closet.
You have to go take pictures of them. Come on.
Yeah, and David wrote in and said, 24-hour news cycle? No, Bob. Ours is no 24-hour news cycle, closer to 24 minutes. Get the bloodied up blonde girl to the screen before Drudge can write about it.
Well, it's like I say, if you want to see some good ones on that, go to over to Comedy Central to Jon Stewart. And last week he ripped CNN a new one, where he was showing all the ones where, you know, where they would, you know, have people on, let them make statements, and wouldn't check what they were saying. You know, you had Senator Kyle on saying all these things, and it's like they, you know, like Jon Stewart said, we looked into it. Most of what he's saying was just made up. You know, he's sitting there giving us figures that don't mean anything because we can't find any source. You know, it's sort of the some people say. It's like, what? Some people say a lot of things. A lot of them are crazy people.
Yeah.
Why are you listening to them?
Which points up this business with the yes men at the National Press Club.
Yeah.
Even the tiniest little bit of journalism would have made clear that it was a piece of satire.
Oh, yeah.
They're so lazy and they're so used to doing stenography, Luke, that they couldn't even be bothered to do that.
I tell you the one that's going on, and you probably know this, you're closer to it than even I am, is the way our wonderful media has not been covering this fellow who is running for the governor of Virginia. I believe it's McConnell, who apparently is a Pat Robertson Manchurian candidate.
Yeah.
Who is a Regent graduate, and apparently is one of these ones who's part of his, is if you dig into on his side, you know, his side to get elected, where apparently he talks about the fact how women shouldn't be working, you know, and some other things where he's totally against, you know, abortion, even for rape and incest, you know, but apparently the press doesn't want to talk to him too much about that. So that might get in the way.
Right.
And
that's that blurring of the line between so-called journalism and PR.
Oh, yeah. Well, apparently, the one up in New Jersey, apparently this scandal's catching up with Christie. I think someone running, and there's some kind of scandal going on up there that apparently they've started to notice it. Apparently somebody stood up at the wrong time, and they saw it and said, hey, let's find out what this is about. Well, apparently the election time is getting to be interesting, because we're just starting having early voting on our local council seats. But you know what I mean? It's election's on you before you know it. So
and there you are with no relevant information upon which to base your vote.
No. But, the other one, and I've got to give a clap to Harry Reid for something. It's so rare, I'm happy to do it every once in a while.
That's okay. I can counter it with a Harry Reid screw-up.
I know. The one I liked was the one where he got in front of one of the committees, you know, and normally senators don't testify. He essentially said, you know, what we need to do is we need to look into that little antitrust legislation that some act like in 45, that we need to think about repealing that. The one that lets them set their rates. And apparently I'm just wondering how many of the insurance companies all of a sudden had to go on oxygen when he mentioned that. Because that's their license to steal.
It absolutely is. And, I said I would counter that with a nasty Harry story. Harry had a briefing, you know, with reporters today. And at the briefing, he was asked whether the public option will be part of the health care package that comes to the Senate floor. Now, earlier this month, he said it will be part of the final bill. Today, and you know, never mind me, hear it from his lips. Yeah, he's not looking so good. I think he's losing weight. But no, hear it from Harry himself.
We'll see.
Are the negotiations leaning toward or against a public option at this point?
The negotiations are leaning about a public option. Well, we're talking about
that, Senator. Did you get that, Luke?
No.
Okay. The question is, are the negotiations leaning toward or against a public option at this point? And Harry's too cute by half answer is, the negotiations are leaning about a public option. And then the question, can you clarify?
He said, are we leaning toward or against a public option? I said, we're leaning toward talking about a public option. No decision has been made. We had not a long discussion last night on public option. I've had a number of meetings in my office dealing with Democrats and Republicans on the public option aspect of it. And when the decision's made to send this on to the CBO, I will have made a decision as to what we're going to do with the public option. It's not done yet.
Well, I tell you what, it's not often in the history of this republic that you get forceful, decisive language like that coming from a Senate Majority Leader.
I swear Jell-O would have more backbone.
Now, bless their hearts, the two senators from Colorado, Senator Mark Udall and Michael Bennett, both called on their Senate colleagues. And this is fun because, you know, we've heard this phrase before, Luke. This is fun. They called on their Senate colleagues to give the public option an up or down vote. Remember that up or down vote?
Damn up and down.
But, you know, there's something in Harry's little comment here that also it just jumps out at me, and it's this. I've had a number of meetings in my office dealing with Democrats and Republicans on the public option aspect of it. And my only question is this. After 6 months and some 22,500 Americans dead for want of health care, not from disease, but
health care,
just access to health care, later, Harry is still having conversations with Republicans in his office about the public option. I guess maybe I'm a simpleton, Luke, but my question is, why?
Like I said, but the only reason I can see to invite the Republicans in is to show them the window. There you go.
Yeah, what's the fancy word for that? Defenestration.
It's one of those things, just like say, you know, when their answer is no, hell no, it's like, I'm sorry, there ain't a whole lot of getting any agreement out of that.
And yeah, the only discussion you have with them at that point, Luke, is to say, you still feel that way? Okay, get out.
So we'll call you back when we tell you what we want to do. You know, and it's like, first thing you ought to do is turn around and say, you know, all those, I don't remember if it's in the House bill or in the Senate bill. You know, where the Republicans put like about 140 amendments to it, and then nobody would vote for it. It's like, guess what? Those are gone. So if you ain't going to vote for it, you ain't getting it. So you put amendments on this thing all day. Guess what? We got things called erasers. We can wipe it out. My golly, isn't it amazing? It wasn't there.
But you know what? The Republican Party has had more than an opportunity to have a seat at this table, at this discussion. They've been treated preferentially, in fact.
Oh, I tell you what.
And at this point, it's over as far as I'm concerned. We know that they're no, so, you know, let's get something. Let's get the public option. Let's get it onto the Senate floor. Let's make it part of reconciliation. And let's get it passed and get it, you know, get something to the president's desk.
And then let's drop the little bomb right after he signed it. And, you know, in the next Congress, we're going to see something called single payer, too. You know, because that was the fool. That's where Harry and the company screwed up from day one. Took that off the table before they even talked to anybody. Oh, we ain't even going to talk single payer. Single payer should have been what you gave up to get the public option.
Exactly. You don't negotiate it toward it. You negotiate back to it.
Oh, I tell you what. I think a good stiff wind and we can say goodbye to Harry.
But bear in mind, I don't know if you saw this or not, Luke. Newt Gingrich is already positioning himself. Yeah, this is just charming. He is calling, and I've got the quote right here. I've got the audio right here. And this, you know, he does bring up an important point. This business of health care reform that only takes effect in 2013, no, it needs to take effect right now so it can start succeeding, so that issue will be taken away from the right wing, because as Newt indicates here, he is clearly not going to give it up.
Oh, no.
Here it comes.
Let me ask you this, because we're running out of time, and maybe in light of where you are in your new novel, Trying Men's Souls, because I find these very trying times. You know, here we've got two bills in the Senate. We've got three bills in the House. They're going to end up in conference here. But the bottom line is that they're going to pass a health care bill that nobody has read. How bad is that for the country?
Let me make a straightforward promise. These bills can't be implemented before 2013. If they pass a bill which is a disaster, the number one campaign issue in 2010 and 2012 is going to be repeal the bill. We repealed the catastrophic health legislation that was a disaster. We can repeal this monstrosity. If they're determined to put something bad in the country can rise up, defeat the people who do it, and repeal it.
You got to give them points for brass.
Well, you know, it's the thing about, you know, nobody's read it. It's like, okay, guys, can we say the name Patriot Act?
Well, but then again, if nobody's read it, then how does he know it's going to be a disaster?
It's one of these things where they're talking about death panels and all that. It's in the bill, and they're sitting there going, "We haven't even written the bill yet. How do you know what's in it?" You're sitting there going, "Is Kreskin on your staff now? What?"
If they're determined to put something bad in the country can rise up, defeat the people who do it, and repeal it. You know, I don't know how this man has the again, it's nothing but brass. It's nothing but bravado. Because after the public shame and the public humiliation that he exposed himself to by his own sleazy, slippery, nasty conduct, but then again, there's Fox, and Fox knows no shame, and that's where this yammerhead was talking.
Oh, something else, just off tangent the way, but on Fox, I saw something today. I think it was it Media Matters, or I can't remember where I saw it. But isn't it amazing though how Fox has all these people on from the Weekly Standard and the Wall Street Journal and all these different groups, but you know, no one ever identifies themselves as being, as they want everybody else to disclose who they are. They never say, "Oh yeah, I'm a Rupert Murdoch employee or a News Corp employee."
No. IOKIYAR.
Well, you saw the thing where the guy that's on CNN, Castellanos?
Yeah.
Where he got caught.
Yeah, stone cold busted.
You know,
because it turns out that he's the head of another one of these PR flackeries that's been hired by the Republican Party.
Yeah.
And so he's just doing his part to earn his fee.
But you know what I mean? It's one of those things, you know, where every time remember when they caught Richard Wolff, where he had another job, and freely admitted they should have been upfront about that. But they corrected it. But, you know, isn't it amazing, though, when you think of how every time you look on one of these things, you see somewhere from the Wall Street Journal on a Fox show, you don't see any or any of these other side groups of the Fox, of News Corp. They never come out and say, "Oh, yeah, I'm a member of News Corp. You know, I'm part of the company." Because if somebody over at NBC was to come on there and just say, Radigan or somebody like that, you know, and it didn't say who he was. Oh, dear Lord, if you're sneaking in your own people, oh, how dare you?
Sure, exactly. And I think we're seeing a common theme develop in the first hour of the program here, Luke. What is the actual state of journalism today? Because CNN is supposed to be a news organization. We know what Fox is, but CNN was started as an honest-to-God news organization. I toddled around those halls when it was still fairly young. It was only 7 years old when I was there.
Now, I hate to tell you this, but I know you work there. I know Mike Malloy worked there. I honestly began to think, from what I've seen of them for the last 10, 15 years, we should go back to calling them what their name used to be.
Chicken Noodle News?
Noodle News, yep.
Well, that's what they're behaving like, but the thing is,
a report thing.
The only way you get Alex Castellanos on your show is if you are letting PR flackery masquerade as journalism.
Sure. Well, I mean, that's why anytime there's anything, you know, the one I used to love was when the Donahue show was on, and he used to work at Fair, I can't think of his name all of a sudden, was the producer. And he said, we got to the point where he said, you know, every time I had a Democrat, a liberal on, I had to have 2 to 3 conservatives on to balance. He said that I wanted to have Noam Chomsky on, but I couldn't figure any way to get 25 chairs on there for all the conservatives I'd have to have on.
And that's about the size of it. Luke, good hearing from you this evening.
All right, bud. You have a good evening.
All right. You take care.
Enjoy.
Absolutely. Bye now. Calling from East Tennessee, that's our buddy Luke. And, heck, let's just keep it rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Brother Bob. How are we? This
Brother Albert.
Yeah, here we go. I'll tell you what, that Yes Men clip was just awesome. That was just, I love those guys. Those guys are great. Oh, for a second there, I was like, wait a minute, what universe did I wake up in? Because I didn't catch your lead in. I was sitting there, I was like, is this guy serious? Damn right, yeah, you bet we need to do that.
Go, brother, go!
Yeah, I was like, oh,
run!
I mean, you know, we talked about that, when he talked about that Colt capture, and he said what he said, I was like, look at that. Bob, you know, we lit the fire, and it took Colt, you know? It's just unbelievable. That was just and then to see what they really did with it, hey, now that issue's out there, those guys are great, you know, and they always get them, and these guys are never ready for it. They always throw some sort of tantrum in regards to it. There's actually a documentary about them. I'm sure you've seen it. But
I haven't. I was asked, David in Tennessee asked me earlier, have you seen the Yes Men DVD? And he described it as, Python does street theater, does morality play.
Oh, it's unreal. There's no way. See, like, they're the Johnny Appleseed of the day, you know, just with ideas, you know. They're doing that. They're going into the, you know, the heart of this heartless beast and tossing seeds of, you know, just satire at these guys. And once in a while, you know, those seeds stick. You know, once in a while, it's got to stick, you know. And you will always have those that want to rewrite the Bible, you know what I'm saying? Like where you talked about the conservapedia freaks. What the hell are they going to do? Like that's the most unbelievable thing I've ever heard as well.
Well, what I love is that the other thing they're going to pull out, Albert, in addition to taking away that, you know, that dishonorable, scurrilous slander of the rich, the other thing they're going to do is take out the woman caught in adultery story. Now, which, by the way, as Leonard Pitts pointed out in his column for the Miami Herald, Bart Ehrman from the University of North Carolina, who has been on this program, who wrote Misquoting Jesus, you know, he'll tell you right up front that wasn't in the original version of the Book of Mark, that was added by a later scribe for reasons which we cannot ascribe. But it's not original, so it probably shouldn't be in there. But the reason this is beautiful, this is just beautiful. The reason that the conservative freaks want to take it out. You sitting down?
No, I'll sit. Right.
Okay, because there may be screaming involved. The reason that they want to take out the woman caught in adultery is because this is according to Andrew Schlafly, you know, Phyllis's little boy. This is because the verses about the woman caught in adultery portray Christ as, and it's going to be tough to get it out of my mouth, being too easy on sinners. That name, lad.
Sadomasochistic freaks. They're ridiculous. And then you wonder why we catch them hanging from the closet freaking pole there.
Oh, yeah. Why we catch them, we don't catch them swinging from the chandelier. We catch them having sex with the chandelier.
Yeah, in two wetsuits. And
don't make me play that song.
I'm telling you, that's ridiculous. I mean, they're just unbelievable. But that's why, you see, this is what I'm saying. They don't have anything underneath their feet. That kind of crap won't fly.
Well, I punched you, and like a real man, Albert, you got up off the mat. I'm going to hit you again. I mentioned earlier that they want to change that rich man getting into the kingdom of heaven verse.
Mm-hmm.
What I love is the rationale from Andrew Schlafly for changing it. They want to change that rich man getting into the kingdom of God business because, and this is a quote, this isn't Bob Funnin. Some people are otherwise going to get the message that I'm going to be lazy so I can get to heaven easier. You know, I love the way the show just sort of runs together over the course of days because this one just turns around and perfectly references itself to Michael Steele last night, the quote from his Univision interview where he said, go through the right door, fill out the right, talking about immigration, go through the right door, fill out the right form, hum a few bars of the Star Spangled Banner, eat some apple pie, and go to work. I'm going to be lazy so I can get into heaven easier. It's the same thing. And now they're going to write themselves their very own little conserva freak of Bible to justify it. Oh,
unbelievable! No, but see that.
God, do it. Okay, we got to stop and say a prayer real quick, Albert.
All right.
God, if you're listening, do us a favor. We know in your book it says you're going to send your son Jesus back. Do us a real quick favor, like right now, and just send us back Bill Hicks as his advance man. He's got work to do. Please, God? Pretty please?
Amen. Yeah. Well, you know, they're there. I know they're there, but in the war of ideas, they've lost completely. And they can't even hold their own testament up. You know what I mean? Like their whole self-identified, they're self-haters. They hate people. They hate everything. That's why, you know, when you sit there and you tell, you know, they don't ever make the connection of, you know, hey, let's save the planet. Screw you, filthy hippie. Oh, go burn some French fry oil or something. You know, whatever they try to say to you. They don't ever make the connection that would be like, just by me saying let's save the planet means you too. Like, they can't even make that, you know, coherent connection. So, of course, you know, I don't like this. You know, I don't like this talking stuff in the movie Ass, so I'm going to take that out. We'll just watch
Ass. Hey, oh, you'll be so proud. I don't know if you were listening last night, but no, while I was down in North Carolina, I knew I was dealing with a younger audience. You know, we're talking about college kids,
yep.
College students, ageism on my part, my bad. But we were talking about what the accumulation of mercury in the human body does to the next generation. You know, that 10-point IQ deficit that happens to any baby born in America today. And, you know, obviously it took, but I wanted to drive the point home, so I'm looking at, and I'm trying to be, you know, trying to sort of pull a little bit off of my unhipness factor. And I just said, quick show of hands. Who here has seen Idiocracy? Every hand in the room went up, Albert. And I said, 10 IQ points per generation, and it won't take 500 years to get to president, not sure. And there were big smiles of recognition all over the room. And I followed it with, brought to you by Carl's Jr. And we engaged.
I want to, but I won't. I want to say the punchline to that.
Because they pay me.
By Carl's Jr. F you, I'm eating.
Oh, I've forgotten that. I thought you were going to go to the. Why do you keep saying it? Because they pay me every time I do.
Oh yeah, there's those little details are just what just.
Well, yeah, like our last conversation. South Carolina's in the house.
You're good. Yeah, I love it, and that's great. See, and that's awesome. Those people, and they'll sit there and go, "Damn, that's going to be something that they're going to carry with them into the future." You know, they're going to hold that. You know, that vibration that you put back. You know, you said, "Oh,
you hope so." You know, you really hope so.
Oh, absolutely.
Because if you can create that point of reference. Because, you know, that's one, and I know people probably get tired of us constantly talking about it, but that's one of those watch it again and again movies, because it stays
yes, sir.
Funny.
Mm-hmm.
And so what you're trying to do is create that nexus of the image of, you know, I'm going to all of y'all tonight.
Oh, and if you ever do get another opportunity, you gotta. Most DVD players have zoom features. When you see the kid parts with the little faces, just sorry, I didn't have to add this in. Pause it and zoom in. Just check the names, and you get the. You know, you just check it out. It's really. They put a lot of work into that. If you pause it and read, like when they show you newspaper clippings and things like that, pause it and read the stuff. It's just. It's even funnier. Sorry, go ahead.
No. That's okay. But just to create that nexus, so that. The next time somebody hears that was in that room, somebody hears coal-fired power plant, they're gonna, they're gonna hear not sure, and they're gonna realize that they don't want to be responsible for helving to create a further stupid America.
That's right.
I mean, we talk about the pernicious effects, Albert, of the TV culture. And the consumer culture and the dumbing down of America and why most of America can't have conversations like we have on the horn. But we also forget that there's also a process of dumbing down America chemically. You know, never mind the dope and the booze. You know, at least there's a buzz involved with that. There was no fun in having 10 points of my IQ wiped out because my mother inhaled, absorbed mercury over the course of her life.
Ate fish, yes.
Yeah, I was born late in my mother's life. She was 38 when I was born, so she had even more mercury in her than most mothers did. God almighty, what might my IQ be if that hadn't happened? I mean, I might get up to room temperature.
Come on now, don't sell yourself too short. Come on, Bob. You might have invented cold fission fusion by now, but, you know.
Yeah, I'm a Southern boy. We'd be doing cold fusion in jelly jars.
Oh, boy, I'll tell you. But at the same time, I think that is catching on. I mean, you know, like the Tony Pert or all these people, they're dinosaurs. They're done. You know, I mean, there's a lot of people that just don't. That's why, you know, like all of a sudden, you know, the election's over. You know, yeah, Fox News has their ratings, but, you know, those people watch TV. Well, a lot of people on our side don't watch. I don't have a television in my house. And the entire time I've known you, and I know we're not alone, I know a lot of people on the horn are the same exact kind of people, where we're like, nah, I ain't paying that per month. Screw that. I don't need that. You know, and we don't.
I'm buying books, baby.
I'm buying books. I'm reading this. I'll watch it on the internet if I need to see it. You know, I mean, there's a lot more avenues to that, and that's why, you know, Rachel Maddow's ratings go down, Keith Olbermann's ratings go down more dramatically, because our side, you know, like we get to the trenches when we need to get there. You know what I mean? We don't stay there, and, you know, just constantly, and then that's why our side at the same time doesn't fabricate. They do fabricate nonsense here and there, but nothing like what the right wing and Fox News does. I mean, Fox News is outraged that they're, you know, but that people are calling them on, that they're just a propaganda arm. That's what they were created for, and that's exactly what they do. I mean, that's the obvious truth. We've known it for years. I mean, finally now it's coming into the, you know, the mainstream of discussion, but, like, why do you think you people were trying to emulate them for so long? you know what they're doing. There was the Bush administration and all that other jazz, and you guys are going to sit there and corner the market on that patriotism and all that flat. Remember that? And, oh, man, people forget real quick, but, you know, at the same time, that kind of stuff, and then all of a sudden the oil and water starts separating, and MSNBC says, hey, maybe we should kind of go a little left, and they went left, and the ratings went up. But, you know, this kind of stuff, you know, we don't have to watch this all the time. We know what's going on. You know, they hate their hypocrisies to be exposed. That's what that guy, jumped up. Oh, my, this is not true, blah, blah, blah. And he's throwing his fit. And he was a little hissy fit that they were, you know, in the room that they rented, they were, you know, not what they say they were. But it wasn't that they were not what they said they were. It was what they said. I mean, that was like they pulled the curtain back to the great, you know, to the great wizard. No, it's just this little crippled guy. I mean, and that's essentially, that's what they need. They need this fear. They need this that we depend on them kind of stuff. That's why they sit there and they do these things that they do with everything in every industry, you know, from drugs and healthcare and to oil and coal. And it's all the same line. And
it's the same con.
It is. It's the same con, and I think most people that you talk to in the street get that. At least in my area. I mean, and I know I live in a different area, but still, I think most people, even if you don't, if you can take out the partisan type language and just communicate the essential points, it's, everyone knows that. Duh. Like, yeah. Like there was, my wife put on, like, to go to sleep last night. We get the Netflix and we do watch that because it's nice. They got all the PBS things on there. We were watching, this whole PBS Frontline, maybe just recently or probably in the last few months, where they talked about the bribery system of how business works. You know, like, you know, oh, yeah, you're the president here. Here's $100 million. And they have these slush funds and all this stuff. And, like, people were shocked. Like, what do you mean? How could you be shocked? I mean, you have to be, like, Ron Williams disconnected for that, whatever that guy's name is. I mean, you have to be, like, what do you mean you don't know these guys do this? Are you kidding?
Are we talking on the same planet?
Exactly. Hello. I mean, well,
I'm sitting here breathing oxygen. You're over there breathing the methane on Venus.
What in the hell world were you in? And that's, you know, and I just hope, you know, a lot of these people in the, you know, entrenched media mafia, you know, I hope they kind of wake up a little bit. My goodness. They're just so far, they're lagging so far behind. They render their own, you know, demise. That's what they're doing. You know, TV is a thing of the past, man. It's not interactive enough. It's not, you know, I can't call up a television show like this. Can't do it, you know. I mean, I think we're going to see a lot more, like, vocal forums and that kind of stuff in terms of the news media. And you sit there and look, here's a little issue. I saw an article on just recently where this is something we've talked about many, many times. And now here I'm seeing articles about it where there's plans maybe in the next 3 years to put a strip, like a third rail in the freeways. So cars that are electric can lower down a little arm or whatever and get charged up as they're driving across, thereby extending their battery life. So you can get into your Prius or whatever, Tesla, if you happen to win the Powerball, and you can get in, and it has a little arm underneath it or what have you, and you can get on the highway, you know, drive around town, yeah, you're doing all right, you know, you start getting low, get up on the freeway, and drive. By driving, you know, you're going to be charging your batteries up, and then, you know, they probably read a little microchip or what have you, and that's your little electric.
Well, you know, and they're taking it the next step. Not having TV, you may not have caught this. I did.
That's it.
But the latest round of advertisements for the Prius, they have added a solar component to it.
About time.
So
it's fast. It's going to happen real fast. It has to happen real fast. What got us out of that? I mean, I've said this many times, and I believe it bears repeating because it needs to be into the universe. How did we get out of the Great Depression, the last Great Depression, right? It was the industrialization and the manufacture of all of our public works and building our infrastructure, right? Put people to work, the infrastructure. I mean, yeah, there were, not everything worked, but a lot of things did work. And the Hoover Dam and the Golden Gate Bridge, all these things that we did over that 10-year period of lag that we had back then. You know, and let's not forget, you know, back then, it took 3 months to send a package to, you know, India. Nowadays, you could do it in a week. So, you know, the world moved a little slower back then, and I believe due to our technology and where we're at now, we don't have to fall down. We don't have to do anything. All we have to do is stand up and think about walking forward like on a little Segway, and we're gonna get our butt in line. If we sit here and rebuild our infrastructure, which needs to get rebuilt, we won't have 10% unemployment. I know a ton of people that love to have a construction job, would love to be able to build something like a Golden Gate Bridge, just for the simple fact that they're blue collar people and they want to look at something and say, I helped build that.
I had a hand in that.
Exactly. I mean, you know, that's one thing about New York, is why people in, you know, these cities have pride about things, is because they built the freaking city. You know what I mean? And that kind of thing gives pride. And then, you know, and then we have the Goldman Sachs and all these other world that come in and they, you know, make money out of nothing. I don't know if you happen to see that. That was a nice, refreshing little thing. I did see that clip on television regarding the magic of Bear Stearns, not Bear Stearns, Goldman Sachs. And the guy comes out. He's a Wall Street type guy, and he's always been real kind of like kind of slimy to me. But once in a while, like Rick Sanchez would happen, or somebody does something outrageous, he calls him on it, and he happened to do that. And you should check it out. I don't remember exactly what it's called, what have you, but it's something to do with Goldman Sachs Magic Act. If you write that in, I'm sure it'll come up on YouTube. Anyway, he sits there and he, you know, shows this, and he's just outraged. Brings Michael Moore on, and they have it, or Michael does another clip, but Michael Moore and him had this big discussion. I didn't even hear any points of discontentment with this financial Wall Street kind of guy and the man who just came out with Capitalism, a Love Story. You know, basically talking about how, I mean, I haven't even seen it, but I could just surmise that the reality of this movie is going to wind up being the obvious truth that this system that we have that's cannibalistic, it's done. We need a new system. We need to, you know, or at least put some clampers down and put this beast back in its cage.
Well, yeah, and that's some of what Grant called in from Oregon last night and was talking a little bit about this. You know, the new finance system that will go with the new economy, that will go with the new production structure. This can work. This stuff can work.
Yes, sir.
You know, the thing you have to overcome is that which Jude pointed out a week or so ago. With that quote about the fact that hate is the easiest organizing emotion to tap into for any human society. So we simply, you're right, we have to keep putting the stuff out there, keep whispering it into the universe's ear until it comes back at us, with full reverb and effects behind it. And the American people can get past the hate that's generated at this stuff. I got a story here. You know, I always got a story here.
Can I just say one thing about hate, though?
Yeah, go ahead. Quick. Go ahead, sure.
The thing about hate, and I think anybody who's been through any kind of self-reflection in their life, once you recognize that hate, once you, like, look at it and identify it, it makes it real. Like, once you really, like, look at it, it makes it easier to get rid of and let go of. So that's one thing about it. I know hate, and I know that statement's without a doubt true, but I look at civilization in a long view type way, and that the development of human beings in a way that, in terms of our emotional systems, that we kind of do, I mean, yeah, we fall into the same pitfalls over and over and over again, but eventually we'll kind of not fall into those pitfalls. Like, you know, people used to jump off the, you know, bridges with wings and flap them and fall, you know, slap into the ground below. You know, yeah, and then eventually, you know, they tried enough times and they figured out, oh, we need the wings to shape like this and so on and so forth. I'm just hoping that we can depart away from hate as a collective, you know, shared emotion. You know what I'm saying? And I think we are. I do think we're moving away from that. So, on with the article.
Okay. This comes out of Neshoba County, Mississippi, Albert. Now, Neshoba County, Mississippi's county seat is Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. Other Philadelphia. Philadelphia, Mississippi is the county seat of Neshoba County, and their elected representative in Congress is a guy by the name of Greg, that's G-R-E-G-G, Greg Harper.
Okay.
Had to get that second G in there just to disambiguate from all the other Gregs, I guess. I don't know. He gave an interview to Politico.
For a double dose of the pimp game.
Yeah, that's right. Two G's for a double. Yeah, for a. Yeah, for a. No, two G's for a giga gagging of his conservatism. Took me a minute, but work with me. You know, we'll always come through here, Albert.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, I'm Greg Harper. Two G's for a giga gagging my conservatism.
I got game.
so he does this interview with Politico, and Politico asked him about the Congressional Sportsman's Caucus, of which I suppose he is a member. Now, let's do a little remembering, a little memorializing here, as it were. It was in 1964 that Klansmen lynched three young civil rights workers in Neshoba County, Mississippi, and buried them in an earthen dam, not unlike the earthen dams that hold back the sludge here in Appalachia. All right? And you know that this summer has been a very, very troubled summer supporters of mountaintop removal screaming things like, save a coal miner, hang a tree hugger. And you know about the white supremacist, the ignorant, knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing POS perpetrated those heinous acts up on Kayford Mountain on July the 4th, you know, threatening to slit children's throats and things like that. That kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And what we've been talking about recently, the fact that a group of people who went to try to have lunch at a restaurant in Madison, West Virginia, a restaurant called Hudson's, were denied service there because they were told that they don't serve tree huggers. All right. Tree huggers is the name that the coal industry have given to those of us who want to find a way forward out of coal's long, dark nightmare in West Virginia.
See, and that, you know, just real quick, can I just say something on that? Like, that is such a limited, like, this shows you how just utterly dumb these people are. Them tree huggers, they come from, you know, the redwood forests and the forests of the great, you know, the Pacific Northwest, or any of these old-growth forests where people would sit there and not want to be clear-cut for just lumber. They're calling you tree huggers, but you're not just trying to protect the trees. There's so much more to that. They can't even call you what you guys really are.
Mountaineers.
You know, exactly. Or them hugging the mountains, mountain huggers. Yeah. I think that's another order of magnitude. I'm sorry.
Right. Well, you know, and that's also imaging, Albert, because you know the way we there's nothing worse. Well, you know, all the mountaintop removers is talk about how you know we're creating flat land for economic development here in West Virginia, right? Well, no offense to folks who live out in less crenellated country, but. We ought to recast ourselves as mountaineers and call the mountaintop removal people flatlanders, because that's what they proudly state they are. They're flatlanders. They're also flat earthers, but that's another story. But anyway, to get back to this whole thing, so you know that's the background, and this Greg Harper, two G's for a giga gaggin of his conservatism. Answers the question about what the Congressional Sportsman's Caucus does in the interview with Politico by saying the following.
Should I sit?
Sitting would be good.
Okay.
Given all of the setup that's gone with this, the punchline, the finish, as it were, the big blow-off, as they say on the Carnival Midway, is stunning. We have people here being threatened with murder because they are so-called tree huggers. So naturally, in response to the question, what does the Congressional Sportsman's Caucus do? Greg Harper of Mississippi answers, we hunt liberal tree-hugging Democrats, although it does seem like a waste of good ammunition. Fighting back the screams, aren't you?
Utter, unbelievable Phil.
You know, welcome to. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe we could do a show about them on for-profit TV and call it Elimination American Style, with little 15-minute vignettes featuring washed-up right-wing actors in stories about how much they hate the liberals. Yeah, we hunt liberal tree-hugging Democrats, although it does seem like a waste of good ammunition. God, see, and I do that voice, and I do that not necessarily to mock Greg Harper. That, the way I say his name is to mock Greg Harper. Not to mock him, but because I've heard those voices say those things, and that's what they sound like. Oh, that does seem like a waste of good ammunition. And there's that little wry smirk at the end, good ammunition.
That hurts my heart.
Yeah. Although, you know, this Republican from Mississippi, oddly enough, apparently he's not paying attention because this past April, the Congressional Sportsmen's Caucus and other sportsmen and environmental groups called for Congress to pass global warming legislation that includes increased funding for natural resource protection. Oh, and by the way, when somebody pointed out to Greg Harper's office that maybe that wasn't a nice thing to say, a spokesman in his office said, well, what he said was supposed to be fun. It's having a good time.
Yeah. And they just can't. They don't get ahead. They have no idea when to quit, do they? Well, yeah, they're going to render themselves way, way, way out there, and they're just going to have to learn. They're just going to have to learn to, you know, that what we're talking about is for them, not for just us. You know, like, yeah, it's amazing. You know, it's like a dog trying to bite the hand that feeds it. You know what I mean? It's just like, are you serious? Are you people that nearsighted that you just can't comprehend something that, you know, to why we have to do what we need to do? I mean, your fellow hunters are getting it. They're seeing it. They understand. That's why they're sitting there doing, what do they want? Some global warming legislation. I mean, this is, you know, climate change is going to be a major factor of this planet. You know, I understand. Whatever. These guys are ridiculous, Bob. They're just unbelievable. You know, they haven't stopped saying the most outrageous crap I've ever heard in my life. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They just don't stop. I mean, 3 months ago, you know, they're only going to keep talking crazier and crazier, too. It's just, you know, they're just kicking and flailing, looking for ground under their feet. You know, they're trying to reach air. They're just panicked, and they're panicked and drunk and in the water, and they have no idea.
Well, and mean, don't forget mean.
Oh, yeah.
Because that kind of goes, you know, these aren't your lovable drunks. These are you're getting a fight, be insulted at the first cross word drunks. Ah, you want to go? And you know that happened a week ago tonight in Charleston. When one woman stood up to speak, they hollered, "A village is missing its idiot." The mountaintop removers did, and a man stood up and said, "That's my wife you're talking to." And because there was 700 of them, you know, to one, they responded, "Well, then look it. You must be the village idiot's husband. You got a problem with that and want to take it outside?"
Boy. Boy, oh, boy. Unbelievable. It's just so primitive. It's unbelievable. It's ridiculous. I won't take it outside, everything. So, yeah, I'll fight you about it.
No, I want to kick your ass right here in front of the Army Corps of Engineers. That's what I want to do if you got the guts to fight one-on-one without your other 699 friends. But, of course, we're nonviolent.
Oh, absolutely.
And we can't do that.
That's just how weak they are. Just how weak they are. They have no...
You know, there's 1,000 answers to this. You know, there's...
Exactly.
What do you say we sit down and, like rational adults, discuss this instead of resorting to brutish caveman violence?
Yeah. Exactly.
Would you care to, you know, discuss this and put it into the marketplace of ideas and see whose ideas are better? Tree hugger!
Yeah. See, and, that's that sad thing. And this is why, you know, Glenn Beck's, this is why it's kind of scary when Glenn Beck and Sean, you know, Hannity start talking to people of this kind of, you know, intellect. And I'm not trying to pretend like I'm, you know, Nikolai Tesla over here, but at the same time, I mean, come on now, people. This is fundamentals. I mean, how is it your enemy? Listen, you don't have to blow up mountains. You could put up windmills. Why is that threatening to you? Like, I just can't conceive of it. I can't understand how, I understand that they are, but I can wrap my head around a serial killer before I can kind of comprehend where these people are coming from when they just they cut their nose off to spite their face. They'll sit there and, you know, like rage chimpanzees in a cave. I'll never forget when I was a little, there was a game farm where I grew up on Long Island. And we used to go there. You know, it's nice when you're a little kid. Everybody loves sea animals and what have you. And it was just a real, you know, real, real primitive type of zoo. It was kind of run down and blah, blah, blah. Anyhow, there was this chimpanzee. I'll never forget it in my entire life. Anybody who's ever listened has been to this game farm on Long Island, and they've probably seen this, okay? Kevin, I'm thinking of Kevin. Maybe Kevin went out there on a school trip one day. Anyway. There's a chimpanzee, and he's in the cage, and, like, they give you, like, this little thing where you put a quarter, give him some corn or food or, you know, little treats, and you put him in the thing. Well, what happened was, you know, teenagers, so on and so forth, and, you know, back then a lot of people smoked, and so people would give him cigarettes, and he would mimic and get it. And this chimpanzee was addicted to cigarettes. And that's how, and when I hear that kind of crap, I think of, I forget his name, I don't remember his name, but I think of that chimpanzee. When he would see some, I mean, we would watch him and feed him, because he would be so nuts, it would be scary to me as a little kid. It was just scary how crazy he was for that nicotine. He wanted that cigarette, and, you know, okay, here, and they'd throw it to him, and he'd, I mean, it was a scary thing, and that's what they're like, you know, oh, you want to take my job and my double wide?
Yeah, don't forget the tanning bed.
I mean, you know, and that's the most selfish crap I've ever heard in my entire life. You know, they talk responsibility. That shit ain't responsible. It's not responsible what they're doing. This is irresponsible. And if they believe in this, you know, this cloud being Jesus and God and all this crap, and when he comes back, and he's coming back soon, it's not like, he's coming back in my life. Guarantee that. So there's a lot of those people that say, I'll kick your ass. Well, Jesus is coming. Like, he could be here now. You know, and that's the, I'm sorry about that. You know, please forgive me. You know, but anyway, you know, what are we going to do? We're going to hand back the earth, this, you know, decrepit, hollowed out, you know, husk of a shell. We started in the Garden of Eden, and we're going to give them back, you know, doom without the worms. I mean, come on. I mean, come on. It's just unbelievable.
Hey, Arrakis was made to test the faithful.
Yeah, let's get out there first. Let's go find it. Let's not make it. You know, like the same thing, you know, it's just, heard this interesting thing regarding Israel, you know, they did the same thing. Instead of finding the homeland, they tried to make it. And that's a lot of root of what the problem is. And now they have this entrenched view of what it needs to be. And the Arabs are there, and they can't be there for it to happen. So what are we going to do? Looks like we have something to think about. Anyway. But, you know, and that's how these people, they just don't get it. I hope they will. I think just as, you know, people on our side can shed things like fear and, you know, hopefully some cynicism. I mean, it's nice to have some cynicism, but too much of a good thing sometimes isn't a good thing. I don't care what Anthony Bourdain says over and over and over again. Anyway, sorry. Had to give you a little jab.
I understand.
Yeah, he does say that a lot. You know. As we know, no cities like New York. All right. Anyway, and it's kind of true, but it's actually not true at the same time. There's other cities I think are a little better. But anyway.
Well, you know, and he figured that out, too. Or he's figuring it out. When he went to Chicago, he came, if what went on the screen was to be believed, he came back a changed man. He hated their pizza.
No, he liked, what's his name? That, what was that?
Oh, Mancow?
No, that was a sandwich. That was three little piggies.
Yeah.
That looks good, too. But I have some friends. They just went to Chicago. He's going to culinary school there. So we're going to try to, you know, scrimp up and save.
I just want to go to Hot Dogs and have one of them duck dogs.
Yeah, I'm not. I probably won't just because I'm not a big fan of internal organs on top of internal organs. I don't know.
Ah, it's made out of duck breast and stuff.
No, it isn't.
Yeah, it is. The duck.
Foie.
Well, the foie gras goes on top of the duck dog.
Oh, the duck dog. All right.
You can get it without foie gras.
You can, but the French fries are fried in duck fat, which sounds pretty interesting, too. But, hey, you know, let's not get too food. Oh, man, I don't want to even start that.
The French fries fried in duck fat. I want them, Albert. I want them.
Hey, there's got to be some sort of progressive event happening out here. Let's get you to Chicago, Midwest, you know. Bridge the gap between East and West, you know. I'll tell you what, look at Chicago's a big green city. I can't believe they aren't holding more, you know, events out there, you know, just to kind of, you know, showcase.
Well, you know, I guess the second Netroots Nation was in Chicago.
Okay.
So, right. You know, that was done. I just don't want to be there in February. And I've probably just earned the ire of Ben Birch, but I'm sorry, I just don't.
We out here in the Midwest, I don't fall that. I mean, at least I'm not a local, so I can't also speak for.
Yeah, them. you don't want me in Southwest Wisconsin in late February or March either, because you're a kind and compassionate soul.
That's why. Exactly. I don't even want to be. I hibernate, man. Negative 40, woo. Negative 20, you know, once you hit negative, man, once you get below negative 10, 11, you can't tell.
I am a Southern boy, and I am a Southern boy at heart, and, you know, I don't want to live anywhere that I can't go out in the winter and pee outside.
No, you can't.
Now, see, I've just exposed myself as a complete heathen. But, yeah, I mean, it matters.
Oh, it does. I hear you. No, don't get me wrong. I'll tell you, when it comes down to that time, you just stay inside. It's safe.
Yeah, or go ice fishing. But once again, you're staying inside and trusting that the ice ain't going to melt. But when it gets to 40 below, I think you've got a good shot with the ice.
Oh, yeah, no, that's what I'll tell you. Anybody's never seen anybody, I know a lot of you guys down south, I mean, think of a Walmart parking lot on a lake, right? You know, and you just walk by.
But see, I'm so noided up.
Crazy.
I'd be sitting there the whole time. Did I just hear something crack?
Yeah, I'm not that brave. I might do it here and there. You know, there's a couple of little spots that doesn't get as populated. I might do that. But as long as there's some nice beer and probably a little brandy too, because it is really cold. It's ridiculously cold. Almost, I don't know if you've ever seen Fishing with John, but you should. And if you have the Willem Dafoe part where I think they go off to Maine and go ice fishing and wind up dying and all that stuff. But anyway, it's a good little thing. And yeah, it's negative 20s and 40s. It's painful. It just hurts.
Yeah, because whatever's exposed freezes.
Yeah,
I stood in what 10 below wind chill in D.C. last February 1st or something, or March 1st or whatever it was, March 1st I think, and it took a couple of weeks to get the feeling back in the ends of my fingers because they were exposed, and I didn't like. I mean, it was a beautiful gathering, it was a wonderful, exciting event, but didn't like it.
Yeah, no, and negative 10 wind chill is nothing.
Oh, I know that. No, because everybody who lives in Minnesota, North Dakota, Iowa, Wisconsin, you know, they're all going, gee, what a panty waste. He doesn't know from cold. And God knows the Canadians said that they're just, you know, at me.
Yeah, Canada's ridiculous. That's why they use Celsius to fool them.
You know, those schmuck winds or whatever they are that come out. My God.
Oh, it's only 3. No, it's like negative 80. Go right. Inside.
Yeah, it gets so cold they measure it in Kelvin.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Just to make it seem a little warmer.
What the hell temperature is it? Oh, my God. I'm going to die. Anyway, it's ridiculous.
Albert, you have this has been a great conversation. You have a wonderful evening.
You too, Brother Bob, as always, man. Take care.
All right. See you, Albert. Bye now. The Sage of Southwest Wisconsin, that's Brother Albert on the line. This in from David in Tennessee. Jesus is coming? Don't these idiots realize that Jesus has been predicted to arrive on the next bus once every 6 bloody years for the past 126 stinking years? Cannot any of these boobs see and say, scam? Yeah, but you see, it's the only racket we're being wrong. Well, no, then again, there's the Sunday political talk shows. They're the only rackets we're being wrong. Okay, that and weathermen. They're the only rackets where being wrong is actually a plus. It's just astonishing. Maybe that's what we need to change the name of this program to. Just astonishing. I mean, I read the story about the Representative Greg Harper, and who, being a Republican, simply does not apologize. And the two creeps in Orangeburg, South Carolina, they still haven't apologized to the best of my knowledge. They've been roundly condemned, even condemned by Jim Demented himself, who's just crazier than a sprayed roach. And he condemned them. Did they apologize? Not so much. Apologizing is not something that Republicans do. And so there's still no apology from Representative Greg Harper's office, where he said that the Congressional Sportsman's Caucus, we hunt liberal tree-hugging Democrats, although it does seem like a waste of good ammunition. No, those remarks about murder were supposed to be fun. It's having a good time. I was reminded of something by our buddy Michael, Kid A from the chat room. This seems to work so well. You know, he's been on the program, and we consider Will Kimbrough a friend of the program. And being as how Representative Greg Harper is from Neshoba County, Mississippi, Maybe a little reminder is in order.
Came from Philadelphia. Mississippi.
Looked at the world as she flew through the night and counted the towns and guessed at the lives of the people.
line. Never felt at home there until she moved away. Yeah, mostly we just hunt tree-hugging liberals and Democrats, but it seems like a waste of good ammunition. Eliminationism 101. Wonder if our buddy Dave Nyward, I wonder if he knows about this yet. Yeah, he's bound to have seen it. Let's keep it rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
I just put my signet ring in the sky and twinkled in the moonlight and instantly picked up the phone and heard a whoosh and went ahead of 100 callers.
You did?
I know. Wow, where to start? I just wanted to say something regarding what Albert said about hate being diminished or being pushed back. If you look all around the world, we're always going to contend with a big contingency of hate because it traverses in so many different areas and it's so versatile. It is like a unstoppable force that we will always contend with, and I think that's part of the problem that so many people don't realize. I mean, if you think I'm joking, look what's happening in the Congo.
Elaborate, please.
Well, you know, the genocide that's currently going on in the Congo.
Yes, yes.
And
I thought there was some particularly new development. That,
no, I mean...
That makes me a very cynical person, by the way, in case you're keeping score.
Yeah, I know. It's business as usual, you know? Killing is good. Like the Megadeth Dave Mustaine song, Killing is My Business. I'm dedicating this call to something that I don't think many people saw. It certainly wasn't on the news because of all the Balloon Boy coverage that constantly is still going on, which is just surreal to think about. The fact that if this was the 80s, and people, let's not kid ourselves, if this was the 80s, this would be a dead story. It would be gone already. They would have covered it in two. It would have been one of those little flashes. And now, kid trapped in the sky. Oh, turns out to be a hoax.
Yeah, that would have shown up on, you know, that you're right, David. That wouldn't have made That's Incredible.
Right. It would have been on America's Funniest Home Videos. Oh, he just nailed it. It would have been a 1-minute segment on America's Funniest Home Videos, and Bob Saget would have done a narration. Uh-oh, I'm in a balloon. No, I'm not.
know, oh, that may be the most awful and yet at the same time most wonderful Bob Saget impression I have ever heard.
Yeah, he's brilliant on Entourage, by the way. If you ever see some of the segments that he does, a really funny guy and a real knack for saying a lot of lewd cuss words. And
his version of the Aristocrats on that very dodgy film is filth. I mean, and that's a filthy joke. Is as filthy as any of them on there.
Yeah. That's something to think about. I think I'm dedicating this call and our conversation to a 19-year-old who died of a taser attack.
Oh no.
By a police officer. You know, to me, here's something that I think should be a unwritten law. I think it's like a code. I guess you could call it the code of the streets. If two people are fighting and they're willfully fighting each other and one person isn't running away, to interfere with something like that, than just somebody to just get a punch and let it be over, I think it's best for that. I don't know the circumstances of this, but to taser a person for fighting with someone, I don't know. Because to me, I look at it as sometimes you have to let those things play out. Some people need their punches. You know, there's a great video. I don't know if people have seen it. It's viral. It's on from True TV. Some guy is hassling his woman, and they're groping her, and they grab her hair on the street, and this guy literally just starts wailing one after the other, and they keep coming back, Bob. That's the funniest thing. They keep coming back. I'm not kidding you. And the guy gets up and goes, whoa, I just got knocked out. I think I'm going to go have another. Pow! You know? And it's like, it's so surreal. And here's the other thing that's really surreal about it. The crowd is cheering this guy on because these people are stupid. And on top of that, they try to go after his girlfriend again. See, it's the idiocracy of thuggery, I guess. So, yeah, I mean, things like that to me, Bob, I'm not saying we need to have more fights in the streets like that, but in instances like that, you have to let it play out. And I don't know if that was an instance with the taser, but to me, if it was, and the guy wasn't running away, you know what I say? I say, let the fight continue, and pretty soon, that guy's going to realize, man, that was stupid. I need to just get away from this guy because he's walloping me. But instead, we have a dead person from a taser.
Yeah, and tasers. When are we going to reexamine these things? I mean, because, you know, they're supposed to be non-lethal, right? I mean, aren't
yeah.
they? I mean, it's by definition, these are defined as non-lethal weapons. But people are getting killed with?
I don't know. And I just wanted to open that up. But basically what I called about was we haven't talked about the Code Pink altercation with Obama yet, have we?
No, we haven't.
And I'm sure you've heard some, I'm sure you're aware of some of the quotes in that article.
I've seen some of it, but... Do the setup.
Okay, well, apparently Jody Evans, Code Pink co-founder, decided to ambush the president, literally, at a fundraiser, and somebody paid $30,000. Kudos to that person, by the way, who paid $30,000 to go to this fundraiser, Bob. Good Lord. So they get in the fundraiser, and this is going to hurt for all you people who are into Obama, because I'm not going to be nice to him. In this instance, and this is another example of what I'm talking about, of people not being real. And for God's sakes, man, we need to have a real statesman. Eventually, Alan Grayson, I haven't heard anything from him in a little bit, but I don't want him to go away anytime soon. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So she goes up to Obama, and Obama is clueless that this is a Code Pink co-founder. So he hugs her. And they talk a little bit about Afghanistan. And she says to the president, she says, you know, when are the women going to have a political voice in Afghanistan? And Obama deadpans her and says, what do you mean? I have Hillary Clinton involved. He says, and then Jody says, no, I'm talking about the Afghani. And then Obama, what does he say? He has no idea. And this is what I'm talking about, a person.
We're working on that.
No, he says, oh. And he says, Mr. President, we need to do something about Afghanistan. And one of the last things he said to her was, we're not leaving Afghanistan anytime soon. And that's the problem. We don't have... This isn't...
We don't have a strategy. We just know we're not leaving.
I know, this isn't progressive, this is regressive. And that's what Obama is. He's not a moderate, he's a regressive. He wants to regress back to the state of what the American empire does well, which is dismantle and rape a country. Sorry, that's who we have in office right now. And he doesn't want to admit it, nobody wants to admit it, and that's the problem, that's the cancer we all face. We can't talk about this on the streets, Bob. We have to be talking this on a phone line, for God's sakes. We can't be talking about it on the airwaves because people will think you're crazy or they'll shun you or say, why do you got to be so negative? I don't know. See, here's the problem. It's not being negative. It's critically thinking and assessing through a situation that we should all be discussing at once, together. And if we can't do that, then we're not really in the country.
I got no issue to take with you.
And understand this, Bob. What? How can you get behind someone? How can we get behind someone? As the clock keeps ticking, how can we get behind someone who wants to continue on with the American policies that Glenn Greenwald has been so effortlessly giving us exhaustive research on what the Obama administration plans for the next years and the next year after that, and continuing on with these Bush policies? At what point do we all say to ourselves, you know what? We can't deal with this guy.
I don't know the answer to that. It grieves me to come to that, to reach that conclusion that you're describing.
And I'll tell you something.
Because the truth is, if we think we can't deal with Barack Obama, imagine trying to deal with Grandpa Cancer McCain.
I understand.
Or you know, once he had shuffled off this mortal coil, trying to deal with a President Palin. Imagine trying to deal with President Gingrich or President Huckabee or President Jindal or President Bush again, Jebby, on Afghanistan. Here's the trick. Barack Obama had a civil exchange with, in this instance, that civil exchange wouldn't even exist on the other side. They'd be demonized. The Glenn Beck would scream for a while, and that'd be the end of it. I mean, I'm not disagreeing with you, with your general principle,
right?
Or your general thesis. But this is an issue, David, that exists on a sliding scale, as it were.
And, you know, just to be really brutally truthful, and this is going to hurt, again, a lot of Obama supporters, but if this person really was a man for the people, a voice for the voiceless, whatever stupid branding tag be put on this man, you know what he would do, Bob? He wouldn't have a fundraiser for Wall Street. He wouldn't have a fundraiser for tons of corporations. He would think to himself...
He also would not be president, David.
Oh, I understand that. He would take a minute. He would take a moment out to voice out his concerns for the Katrina victims. But again, this ties into perfectly... What I saw this week. Why is the administration wasting any time? Helen Thomas is right, people. Helen Thomas is right. She said, stay away from Fox. And she said it, and she said it eloquently. And the point is that Fox has just been elevated. What did I say about Michelle Malkin? I hate to sound like the Oracle. What did I say about Glenn Beck? What did I say about all of these pundits? When you do this, you're just elevating their ratings, similar to what people did with that Halloween costume. Have you seen how much it's going for lately now? It's up to $99 on eBay. Bravo. More people just bought the costume because you were outraged. This is what I'm talking about, Bob. It's this feedback loop. It's this feedback loop that people just need to look away and realize.
Oh, sure. You mean like where the it's the band in Boston concept, David.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, if it's banned or if it's criticized, it will up sales.
Right.
The fact of the matter is, though, you got to consider where those sales are coming from. Those sales are coming from people who are trying to defend the loathsome bigotry that lies, you know.
Well, I understand where you're coming from, but truth be told, there's so many politically incorrect.
Now, do me a favor. Don't, and I, again, not chastising, don't use that phrase. I'm not trying to edit you or censor you, David, but politically incorrect and politically correct are phrases that are that were coined by the right wing to describe their desire to express their bigotries and not be criticized for it.
Okay, well then, controversial Halloween costumes. What I'm saying is I noticed this. The media magnified and wanted people to be outraged on this costume. I can find a million other costumes that are probably out right now if we did a little bit of mining, and it's just because people don't it doesn't touch a person's nerve, but it's just as offensive. My point is that there has to be a time and a place where you say, you know what? I can't give a spotlight to that because I know it's going to make it popular. I know it's going to elevate it, and it ties right back to what I was saying about with Fox. The fact that Axelrod came out on a morning press show, Bob, I shook my head at this shit. The fact that he comes out and he says, Fox Network isn't news, and actually spent time on it when we have all of these godforsaken issues in this country, tells me that Fox has won.
Right.
Won.
Well, no, it's not that they won. It's look where it came out. Look where it was publicized. It was publicized on Fox, and in that publicity, they say one, you know, Steve Doocy or whoever that geek is, said, what was it? Come on, America, where's your sense of humor? You know, the people who went out and bought it after that publicity did so because they share a worldview of you know, that dirty, bigoted, eliminationist worldview. They share that with the Fox channel. You see what I'm saying? It's not that it upped the sales. It's that Fox chose to run with the story and deliberately upped the sales.
I see what you're saying, but if no one was... My point is this. If no one was outraged, that costume wouldn't be another mega hit that it is now. I was looking at the I was looking at the chart sales of it before on October 12th before the outrage came on. And that's why Fox picked up on it, by the way, because it was getting that sense of outrage on the internet and it was getting that sense of outrage from people, and then suddenly Fox said, "Aha! Now we have something that people can be pissed off about and we can make it skyrocket even more," because before it was going for on eBay about $28. 25, now it's going up to $100. And Amazon really didn't delete that, people. What they did was they just put it on a portal site. This is all business when it comes down to it.
Yeah, but Target did eliminate it, did they not?
They might have, but the point is it's still out there to be sold. People are still going to buy it in droves. And you know what? Here's the other thing. When you try to scold someone about it, it's just going to make people...
Okay, but back up a minute. You know, a lot of you talk about the eBay price going up.
Yeah.
You're far more the eBayer than I am, David.
Yeah.
But isn't that also the collectability factor kicking in, too? People saying, you know, I want this in its original packaging, and then I'm going to turn it around and make a big... Isn't this Thai Beanie Babies all over again?
It's sort of that. It's jumping on the fad. But again, dealing out with an issue like this is what I mentioned when we talk about conservative pundits and stuff like that. All we're doing, and again, it goes back to why David Axelrod and why all these people, they're taking the wrong approach. Helen Thomas is right on target. Because of the fact is you're just elevating them. People need to understand that. You're just elevating these pundits who want you to brand their mascot, their logo, on every single corner of the world that you can, even if it's screaming in defiance and outrage. Because all that matters is you say their name, baby. That's all that matters.
Oh, there's no doubt that there's truth in your thesis. But the thing is, silence. There's a dynamic tension between your side and the idea that silence is acceptance. If, for instance, you are a part of the group that initiated the call for it to be removed from the shelves, and your mission statement says that you will fight bigotry against undocumented immigrants, then by simple virtue of your mission statement, you cannot be silent, because your silence means that you are admitting that you are failing in your mission. You know, the national, and I had no idea this group existed, to be quite honest.
Yeah.
The National Jewish Republicans, both of them, came out and sharply criticized that business in the Orange County Moral Volcano and Battle Cry of Freedom, or whatever that newspaper is, that published the op-ed piece that said, Jim DeMint's as good as a Jew when it comes to pinching pennies.
Yeah,
they had to, David. Now, granted, you know, and frankly, maybe others chose not to, but they had to, because these were Republicans using that hateful old stereotype to advance and defend a fellow Republican. Now, if you are the National Jewish Republicans, you cannot be silent on it, because silence is acceptance. And then people look at you and go, well, you're the National Jewish Republicans, and this was a Republican, and why didn't you speak out?
Mm-hmm.
Is bigotry okay as long as it's coming from your side? So they, and at that point, they're reduced to a cipher. So they had to speak out. What I sense that you're upset about, and rightfully so, is that Fox News is, well, you know, David Axelrod and Anita Dunn are right. They are not a real news organization. They're not journalists. They are a house organ that repeats press releases. Okay? We saw that with the Yes Men bit. They repeat press releases. They don't do news. And so what happened is they saw an opportunity to advance their agenda by arguing America's lost its sense of humor. They don't, you know, they can't, we can't even make oblique fun of those, of the beaners anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying? It's obnoxious. It's hateful. And it feels like I need to go and wash my own mouth out with soap for even using that, you know, that slur.
I see what you're saying, but it's just going to make,
I guess it's an unfortunate consequence of bringing something, a piece of bigotry like that to light, that there will be people on the other side of it who will then go and try to support the bigotry.
But here's another interesting question. With something as, I won't say it's trivial, with something pop culture like that, when the millions of stories that skate by that have just as much hatred and prejudice and racism to them, and they're not covered, and null is mentioned, and we skip on to a story where someone may have...
Oh, sure. I mean, I'm guilty of that. I'm looking at a story that was hot in the chat room last night that, frankly, I should still be all over like a duck on a June bug. Headline, why are Monsanto insiders now appointed to protect your food safety? And this is at Mercola, MERCOLA.com.
Hmm.
And the person who writes to Dr. Mercola, whose blog this is, says, let me see if I can find it real quick. Just one second. Well, basically talking about Tom Vilsack, the new Secretary of Agriculture, who it turns out, and, you know, it's readily accessible information, he is basically a client of Monsanto. And Monsanto is among the worst offenders of genetically modified crops. That's a huge story. It's worthy of an hour on this program. But I didn't do it last night, and I haven't done it this tonight yet. And this conversation gave rise to me at least mentioning it.
Right.
But there, you know, there is a limitation to what can be done. But where Fox is concerned, they look, David, for those stories.
Oh, I understand. But what I'm saying is, eventually, we're going to have to get past that. Did you hear what Fox said?
Well, because Fox lives for that.
Right, right. And we're not, and that's the problem. And we're not getting past it. And that brings me back to what I was telling you about why I have such an ire for this administration going on the national morning and actually mentioning their name over and over and over again. Actual David Axelrod coming out and saying Fox's name. Just a bad move.
But again, that's that same dynamic tension that we were describing earlier, because simply put, if you're going to take them on, you got to take them on the full bore. You can't do it half-assed. Whether or not you take them on is another question. Do you is it more painful for them to be ignored or to be taken on? You know, look, the fact of the matter is, we've had this discussion about talking about what the rodeo clown says, or the life support system for a haircut, what he says, or what Falafel Boy says, or the Savage Wiener says, or, you know, the oxymoron. Anytime we talk about what they said, it's free publicity, and anybody who's been in that world for very long understands that there is no such thing as bad publicity. It is an axiom of that culture, because it is true. So you've got to deal with that, but by the same token, you've got to call out the bigotry, you've got to call out the eliminationism, you've got to call out the racism, you've got to call out the fascism, because silence in the face of all of that garbage means that if left to simply fester, it grows. You know, I don't want to give free publicity for the Federation of Americans for Coal Energy Solutions, but you know what? They're a dirty gang of fraudmongers, and they have to be called out. Now, if they get some free publicity from me out of it, I can't help that. But I cannot simply, because if I operated by that rubric, David, then that would mean that I would be reduced to talking about little more than Ferg's upcoming football games, because somebody's getting free publicity on the other side out of every nefarious thing that I mentioned on this program.
Well, What I'm getting at is the fact it makes the White House look juvenile to keep mentioning Fox's name. Like, if they're such a threat, if they're so pointless, then why are you talking about them? And why are you going on the morning show? Just concentrate on fixing the country. That's what I'm talking about, Bob. Eventually, you're gonna have to take that look in your mirror and say, you know what? Fox is just out to get the money, and we need to concentrate on issues rather than spend time on the morning show, which is why Helen Thomas, she nailed it, Bob. She said, "Don't mess with him. It's just going to backfire on you." And it is, Bob. Watch. You wait. You wait and see. It's going to backfire on this administration. Oh, I wouldn't be surprised if Fox hires the type of evil, evil conservative, Woodward and Bernstein, and finds a mega story, and then this inspires them to be these type of journalists that we want them to be, only in a much evil, sadistic way. And they're just going to be on their ass even harder, which, again, it doesn't make sense, Bob. It doesn't add up. Why are you, Anita Dunn, and what was it, Gibbs? Gibbs actually mentioned, don't turn the channel at 5 o'clock. This is juvenile politics at its best. And you just gave rise, because we all know what's on the 5 o'clock spot. I don't even have to say it.
Yeah.
Game over. They won, Bob. They won. You're going to see, Bob. They won. They got their ratings up. They got their mascots out. And they just gave bonuses to everyone in the producer room. And they're laughing because they know now. They literally know. And the whole world knows now. Who's thinking about who? That's what the game is, people. If you get them thinking about you, and they mention it in any type of anger or any type of emotion, you won. That comes from Curtis Jackson. That comes from 50 Cent. That's from wrestling. That's from Muhammad Ali. Fox won.
They win. Yeah, right.
And that's what I'm talking about.
But wait, David. I got to formulate this right. There is a duality at work here.
Yeah.
Fox wins when they get talked about.
Right.
But the more people who look and realize that it is true that they're not doing journalism, that narrows an already shrinking demographic. I mean, do you know what the demographic is for O'Reilly's viewership?
I've heard about it.
Yeah, with no insult intended to that demographic or people in it. You can't insult the demographic, but you can insult the people in it.
Yeah.
Bill O'Reilly's demographic and Glenn Beck's demographic and, frankly, Steve Doocy's and the whole demographic for all of Fox, the percentage of viewers of that channel who are under 60 is negligible. Your generation is not watching Fox. In large part, neither is mine.
That may be, but the talking points are so viral. I hear it everywhere I go, Bob. And that's, again, why I say this network has won. Because they're a marginal station, and somehow they got the White House, and I'll say it, and I don't care if people get angry, to street team for them. They might as well get in a van with the White House seal right next to the word Fox. This is ridiculous, Bob. And you have to understand, eventually, they need to come back to gravity, lock their feet in and look at the country, look at the issues in this country and say, you know what? We need to stop acting like juvenile D.C. jackasses and realize that Fox isn't going to change, that most people are just going to see us as whiners because remember that photo of the Democratic whining baby? That's what's going to come back, people.
Oh, well, yeah, and that reminds me, I've got a baby story to hit. David, great conversation.
All right, later.
And I don't know that there's an answer to this.
There isn't an answer. You know what it is? It's a vicious cycle.
Well, it's six of one and a half a dozen of another. Both sides benefit. It's the trick is to maximize the benefit.
One last thing before I go.
Yeah.
If anyone wants to contact me regarding the eBay fundraising, it's at hornauction@gmail.com. I got some money on your way. I just did good at the auctions that I went to. And I just did good with some of my sales. So
awesome. Thank you, David.
All I need is a few people. That's all I need. And I can guarantee you fundraising for the Horn.
Horn Auction, HORNAUCTION, @gmail.com.
Right.
Good deal. All right. Thank you, David.
All right, Bob, later.
Bye now. Pop culture correspondent David calling from Maine. I don't know if there is an answer. I honest to God don't know. We've got to take a quick break, and then we'll come back with 25 or 30 minutes of great conversation. This is Tuesday, and I try not to ever let Tuesdays or Thursdays go by where humanly possible without running Brad and Desi's Green News Report, because they do such a magnificent job. So we're going to do that, and then we'll come back with your conversations. This is, of course, Conversation Radio on America's Liberal Voice, listener-supported. This is The Horn.
It's Tuesday, October 20, 2009.
Water, water everywhere, but don't drink it. Countdown to Copenhagen. Plus...
Do you have a business card? Are you with the U.S. Chamber?
I do.
Can I see your business card?
Can I see yours?
I'll show you mine if you show me yours. The media and the U.S. Chamber of Commerce get punked.
Oh, man, do I love that story. All of that and more straight ahead. I'm Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Prepare for 6 minutes of green news and snarky comment.
This is a fraudulent press activity and a stunt.
Hey, I don't make fun of you, U.S. Chamber of Commerce. All right, maybe just a little. But this is no fraudulent press activity. This is your Green News Report. The Green News Report is brought to you by VelvetRevolution.us. Join the Diebold Return Our Money campaign, demanding a refund for more than $100 million taxpayer dollars spent by California alone on Diebold's failed and faulty electronic voting machines. Give Diebold your own 2 cents at DieboldReturnOurMoney.com. That's DieboldReturnOurMoney.com. Okay, Des, as you can tell, I really like this Yes Men story. I'm really glad to see the U.S. Chamber of Commerce get it, but we'll get to that in a second. First, what do you have for us?
Well, this past weekend was the anniversary of the passage of the Clean Water Act, signed into law 37 years ago. The first line states, quote, "It is the national goal that the discharge of pollutants into navigable waters be eliminated by 1985.
By 1985.
How's that going so far?
Yeah, how's that working for you?
Well, as imperfect as it's been, imagine where we'd be without it.
Good point.
A federal court has found ExxonMobil liable for contaminating groundwater in New York City and has ordered the oil giant to pay over $100 million in damages to the city. The case stems from the gasoline additive MTBE, which has been found seeping into groundwater supplies around the country from fuel storage tanks. Exxon says the contaminations are not their fault and has not yet decided whether to appeal the ruling.
Of course, they'll just do what they did with the Exxon Valdez. That went on for years.
20 years.
20 years. Billions of dollars judgment. They finally got a U.S. Supreme Court that worked for them, and they pretty much cut it down to pretty much nothing.
The Philippines are bracing for their third typhoon in a month, where floodwaters have yet to recede from two previous typhoons. Survivors are still waiting for international aid in some areas that are still cut off by mudslides. The two storms had a combined death toll of over 800. Officials are warning of an alarming jump in waterborne diseases. At international climate negotiations in London this week, British Prime Minister Gordon Brown set the stakes in advance of the final meeting in Copenhagen.
If we do not reach a deal over the next few months, let us be in no doubt, since once the damage from unchecked emissions growth is done, no retrospective global agreement in some future period can undo that choice. By then, it will be irretrievably too late.
Wow, pretty alarmist, isn't it?
Meanwhile, the United Nations climate chief says he doesn't think a treaty will be completed in the Copenhagen talks in December, but he's optimistic a framework for moving forward will emerge, with details to be determined later on.
Are you optimistic, Des?
That a framework will come out? Yes. Now, that's what worked with the Montreal Protocol that dealt with the hole in the ozone layer before. It took them 3 years to fill out the details.
And that hole in the ozone layer was subsequently...
It's a successful treaty. It has been dealt with. Finally, more woes for the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. We've been reporting on the departures of several major corporations from the National Chamber of Commerce due to the Chamber's aggressive opposition to climate and clean energy legislation that is to be taken up in the Senate next week. So, Monday, media outlets were understandably stunned at a hastily called press conference when a Chamber spokesman announced a major reversal, that the Chamber would officially support climate change legislation. One little problem, though...
Okay, this is I'm Eric Wolfslagle. I'm with the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. This is not an official U.S. Chamber of Commerce event. This guy is a fraud. He's lying. This is, you know, a stunt that I've never seen before. Whatever this gentleman here said to you today is irrelevant. It's not factual. This is a fraudulent press conference. Okay? He's misrepresenting the U.S. Chamber of Commerce.
Oh, man, that was awesome.
Yeah, it turns out that wasn't a real press conference at all. But the corporate pranksters, the yes men. A National Chamber of Commerce spokesman did intervene in time to stop the conference. The assembled journalists were clearly confused. And, of course, the chamber was not amused.
Yeah, and the guy who showed up from the chamber to stop the conference looked more like an actor than the actual guy who was the actor acting like he was with the U.S. Chamber.
Yeah, the chamber immediately released a statement reiterating its complete opposition to Senate legislation and said it might even pursue criminal charges for fraud. Why did they do it?
You came in here this morning saying you're with the Chamber of Commerce, and you're not. Who are you?
Well, I represent the position that the Chamber of Commerce must take, and the inevitable position that it must take.
You can see that entire video at our website, greennews.bradblog.com. That and a whole bunch more. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyle.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Thanks to Brad and Desi for an ongoing, just brilliant work on their part, the Green News Report, and thanks to them also for doing such a magnificent job highlighting the news, as we do here, of what's happening in the coal fields. I've passed the story along to Brad about the denial of service at Hudson's Restaurant in Madison, West Virginia, to them, and hopefully we can get some broader exposure for the story, because, as I'm sure you know, it's shocking. It is simply shocking that something like that could happen in 2009 America. It is hand in glove with the idiot who, what's his name? Greg Harper. Saying, we hunt liberal tree-hugging Democrats, although it does seem like a waste of good ammunition. It's astonishing that that would be said in 2009. And you know what? It's not astonishing. No. This isn't about his political correctness or incorrectness. It is about language openly used that has a direct connection to incitements to violence against people of a different political viewpoint. And it's not funny. Not even a little bit. You know, there was lots of this talk going around the country before the assassination of John Kennedy. I'm in the middle of reading a brilliant book right now, and I am going right back to the phones, I promise. I began reading a brilliant book that was provided to me for review, and I'm going to try to get the author on fairly soon. I'm really going to try to. The name of the book is JFK and the Unspeakable, Why He Died and Why It Matters. It is by James Douglas. And it's fairly easy to read, but it's almost impossible to read, because I know how it ends. But he has theories in place inside this book and context that is applicable to the modern era as well, and which we fail to comprehend and process at our own peril. So I hope we'll be talking with Mr. Douglas on the program sometime in the near future. I have to remember to get back to... to the folks who provided me with the book so we can get Mr. Douglas on the air. You know, it was said to me earlier by David in Tennessee talking about Greg Harper. That was his name, wasn't Harper? Yeah, Harper. Talking about killing Democrats and liberal tree huggers. He said, you know, it ain't so cool to joke about those of an opposing view if you're from a place where citizens were killed for offering to help the residents register to vote. It just ain't funny. Not at all. Not at all. But Greg Harper lives in a little right-wing bubble. And it's a sick place. A very sick place. Agnes popped into the studio long enough to see who was on the lines and help me out a little bit. That's how I know that Brian from New Hampshire is on the line right now. Hey, Brian, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how are you? Yeah, you just where did you were just talking earlier about the tragedy in that Neshoba County in Philadelphia, Mississippi, about the three civil rights workers. And where did Ronald Reagan choose to announce his candidacy for president in 1979, 1980?
There, you know.
Yeah, I can't. And then he's the same guy, the same hero, supposedly, his grandfatherly guy who was no threat, exactly the opposite. He was total help to the war profiteers and corporations that John Kennedy may well have been because he wanted to de-escalate the Vietnam War. Another book about JFK by John Newman, the former CIA and military intelligence man. JFK in Vietnam, Kennedy was the only man in his administration and the higher-ups that really was not a hawk on Vietnam. That's the sad part of it. That was not paid off by the military war profiteers of the industrial complex that Mr. Eisenhower, outgoing President Eisenhower, warned us about. But the fact is, Ronald Reagan, there's so much wrong with that man's reign. There's so much that started the social Darwinism from January 20th, 1981 onwards that there's so much is wrong with this country. Needs to be repaired. He was influenced much by libertarians and their so-called thought. They're profiteering social Darwinism, uberales. It's just disgusting. I did want to talk about, you had the earlier call talking about the Conservopedia. I've heard of.
Oh, it's a real la la land when you go there, Brian. I recommend against it.
No, I know. I haven't even. I just read. You've read quotes from it. Mike Malloy's read a couple of quotes from it. It's not worth going there. I think I'd rather go to some middle school online newspapers. Those kids would have a much better serious idea of scholarship and basic wisdom and more. Are far more mature wisdom than the people at Conservopedia. I'm going by I've been trying to study the Gnostic Bible and Gnostic Gospels and the Nag Hammadi Bible. It's so complex.
Fascinating, isn't it?
Yeah, it brings a different Jesus to the fore who it may not have been. It may have really been the real historical Jesus, though, a young rabbi, a thinking.
Oh, when you read the Gospel, when you read the Gospel of St. Thomas, you are reading a completely different guy.
Yeah, and it starts to get into that area with I guess it's the book, the books of Mark and the Gospels of Matthew and Luke start to get into that kind of Jesus, and away from the supernatural being that you toss away all free will and free thought and let Jesus solve everything. He's such a spiritual, godlike being. You know, the ancient Greeks didn't even do that with the half god being named Hercules. If you. It's just that they would denounce him at all the time if he was being too egotistical or too what's the term for masticating is it, I know it has something to do with another term where Woody Allen says don't knock masturbation, it's sex with someone I love, but mastication is where you overeat.
Yeah, that's the act of chewing.
A connoisseur, yeah. But that's where Hercules does that, and you can even see that in a Steve Reeves movie, folks. It's just but the Heracles and the seven against Thebes, even the lowest Greek peasant was allowed to. It's something like the Japanese samurai relationship with their own fellow peasants. They could be insulted by an average peasant or farmer because they were no warlike threat or violent threat to the samurai had such status in the society. And they wouldn't, it was not like the feud, it was different from the feudalism of Europe anyway, and Hercules too, it just, they've been trying, it goes back to Socrates too, I believe was very much a Jesus Christ like figure in his own, being put to death there in Athens.
Oh, that's why the early church.
Free of a speech.
Right, that's why the early church fathers, Brian, Socrates' ideas were so similar to some ideas espoused by Jesus that since they had already gone to all the trouble of turning Jesus into, you know, the super magic zombie god, they had to do something with Socrates. So
right.
They, by official church doctrine, Socrates was declared to be Homo Christianus Naturaliter, which is the naturally Christian man. He was a Christian before Christ.
Right. They gave him honors, but they didn't want him to be a rival to the new Savior.
Yeah, that was dangerous.
Yeah, that was... Okay. And I'm going by the St. Mark. The St. Mark had a book he wrote later from... It's called Q, and by later historians, it's Quell, and the German name for it, for source.
Right.
From the story of Jesus. It was written a couple of decades after Jesus was put to death.
Right. Quella means source, and it is...
Yeah.
It has never been found, but it is clearly the source material for everything that's in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, which are referred to as the Synoptic Gospels.
And I'll just give a quick quote from the Gnostic Gospel, page 36, Early Wisdom Gospels, just one sentence here. The sayings Gospel Q and the Gospel of Thomas present Jesus of Nazareth as a Jewish sage, and they may well have gotten it in large part historically right, end quote. It goes on from there, but just that there's so much more to Christianity that and I believe that the real historical figure, Jesus, even if you're an atheist, I think you can believe. I know there was something on the internet back a couple of years ago that I think it's another phony historically lazy site there that said that Jesus never existed. That's nonsense too. But I believe even if you're an atheist, you can look at the real history of Christ. Read books by, like, Houston Smith is a great scholar on the subject. But there's so many others that are open-minded people. I'll say the dirty word liberal in universal classic sense of the term liberal, which includes people from Winston Churchill to, you know, not Mussolini, but...
Kaiser Wilhelm.
Count von Stauffenberg of Germany. I was just reading up on him.
I was joking.
July 20th, a great German hero against Hitler, who was against that antichristic being there. And he gave his life for that, of course, to try to commit tyrannicide. But in the largest sense of the word liberal, that's what the Bible, I believe, is meant to be about. It's not meant to constrict thought. And to you know, try to compartmentalize things. That's what our intelligence community has done. That's what the guy that the General Graves, I believe, the atomic bomb, the Manhattan Project, they had to compartmentalize everything. And even in Tom Hartman's book there about the death of the John F. Kennedy, and you were also saying, Mr. Douglas' book, I've read it, it's a hauntingly historically accurate book, Bob. It's a powerful, a true...
His presentation of the nexus between what was happening in the political present in the United States, alongside the writings of Thomas Merton, are stunning.
Right, and they just Thomas Merton. You could call him a conservative leaning theologian, but he's very much a liberal man in the classical sense of the term. He was very much an open minded and began to realize that these anti-communists, that the John Birchers and the rest are very dangerous. They're fascist indeed, was what he was trying to, say, politely, but he was being right about that, and that John F. Kennedy was being, betrayed by their, hawkishness. And that may have gotten them killed with the hawkish stance on too many of our leaders regarding Vietnam. I still believe that's what got him killed in Dallas. They were gunning for him in Tampa just days before that, and in Chicago in early November 1963. They were people had it in for him, but they, and like the anti-Castro Cubans, I still don't understand why they take it out on Kennedy when it's this Richard Bissell and Alan Dulles and the rest that they set up those anti-Castro Cubans to be overrun by Castro's artillery. They assured Kennedy that these people were going to go into Cuba and have a popular uprising in the hills of Cuba, much like Castro did from the mid-1950s on to taking Cuba in January 1, 1959. But they assured Kennedy that they would create their own revolutionary faction in Cuba against Castro. But the fact is that they did not say a thing about needing U.S. armed forces, that even air support, let alone ground troops, massive ground troops to be used during the Bay of Pigs once those Cubans, those poor
betrayed by the CIA, Cubans were pinned down at the Bay of Pigs. The John F. Kennedy's got blamed for that by so many conservative thinkers, quote-unquote, again with that conservative pedia nonsense, the same type of anti-thought, reactionary, hateful thinker, that is not really thinking. You're just emoting. And that's what gets in the way of the John Kennedy and Mr. Khrushchev, I believe that part of that book by Mr. Douglas, they have his son there, Khrushchev's son, about how they were really getting ready to move, especially from 1964 onward, to a much better disarmament, much lowering of the weapons, because they had gone through the Cuban Missile Crisis. They had seen what would happen. You stare into the oblivion of the planet. Thank God Richard Nixon was not elected in 1960. If he had been there at the Cuban Missile Crisis, some part of me says he still might have been more mature than these later Republicans. That he still, but much more mature than George W. Bush, of course. That at the Cuban Missile Crisis, he still might not. He might have held back, and he might have not have done anything. That would have been a world-ending, escalation there, which is that we have the right. Perfectly right president there at the time of the Cuban Missile Crisis for the world to survive. And, of course, we also had a World War II veteran himself there, Mr. Khrushchev, in spite of you call him a dictator and all that, too. They both came to the realization of what they were doing was, messing with the entire future life of the planet, at the Cuban Missile Crisis. And they pulled back, and they wanted to pull back further and further. But what happened in Dallas in November 1963 put an end to that. Like September 11th, it's a date that we can't let it go. I don't think it's the right thing. Now, of course, the official people know that it's not just John Wilkes Booth. That he, was the single killer of Abraham Lincoln, but there was a conspiracy by many people before and after that helped him and aided him in his...
Out as a conspiracy to kidnap him. I was astonished the last time I was in D.C., to walk past, what was her name? Mary Surratt's boarding house. Yeah, it's a Chinese restaurant in Chinatown in D.C. on H Street now.
Oh, okay. It's the same idea where you have to let history inexorably give us the truth. We're not America. That's the fact of it. What you were talking about one of your earlier callers there about that I haven't had cable TV since May of 2000 myself, but and also they were saying that the code pink lady there, Jody Evans, I've met her in person. She's a great American heroine for free speech, but the fact is if we want to have Afghan women where they're going to have this full civil rights like that. Well, I don't want to say, but like in an Islamic country, a secular, very much secular Islamic country under Saddam Hussein, where Iraqi women were 80% of the lawyers in his Iraq, at least. I don't know what they are now. There's some parts of the Shia neighborhoods where a woman can't go outside uncover. She gets beaten or worse. This is our liberated Iraq. Saddam's secularism has good points to it. I don't care what people think of it. But Afghanistan, now there's a... I'm looking at a piece here, Foreign Policy magazine, that a writer there saying revolution in a box. He thinks that the box is the TV. He thinks it's going to be a good thing. The more televisions that go into the third world, right now, by 2007, he says 1.1 billion households had at least one television worldwide, and he says by 2013 another 150 million plus households will be tuned in to the. I don't know if that's a. That may be right, but that's still not. We still have we'll have like 7 billion people by that time, and I would say that there's still a lot of people that are being deprived of not just that, but the internet.
Well, but it also depends on what's being sent to them over the box. Hey, Brian, I hate to interrupt you, but I want to try to get to one more call. Wonderful conversation this evening. Thank you very much.
Good night.
Have a good evening.
Bye bye.
That's Brian calling from New Hampshire, and we roll on to Michael in Ohio. Hey, Michael, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how are you?
I'm doing good.
Oh, man. I woke up this morning, and I must have left MSNBC on my TV when I fell asleep. That's never a good idea, because then you have to wake up to Joe Scarborough.
Oh, that's ugly.
Yeah. I woke up, and I was still half asleep, and I thought The Onion maybe took over my TV, or something, because I saw John Kerry in Afghanistan, and I didn't. I thought maybe the Yes Men took him over there, or you know, he was sent there on behalf of the U.S. Department of Irony, or you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like maybe the Yes Men took him over there and said, "Well, we'll see what's going on here, Senator Kerry. They've decided to do a runoff election. See, now in the United States, in this situation, when you have, say, an ex-oil man, corrupt, and a very questionable re-election for leader of the country." In the U.S., you might say if this happened there, you might do a recount. But here, what they're going to do is a runoff. That's the solution here. And this, I don't know. Like out of all people, John Kerry, seriously? I was just like, I thought I was still asleep. Like,
yeah, what? They couldn't get Jimmy Carter? I mean, I trust him when he comes back and says an election was dirty. You can go to the bank on it. That man has more integrity in his fingernail clippings than in the entire Republican Party.
Oh yeah, yeah, sure, definitely. But do you know what I'm driving at? It was just like John, I appreciate the effort, but how about 5 years ago in Ohio? I mean,
please.
Personally, that would have meant a little bit more to me. I mean. You know what I mean? But, anyway, yeah, I didn't know if that was real at first when I woke up this morning. But, yeah, I don't know what to make of that. But, yeah, I just wanted to call real quick because I said I would call, every day this week if I can. The birthday's coming up.
Yes, right? It is. Absolutely. I neglected to mention it.
4 years. This Saturday, the horn's going to be 4. So next week, they're going to be kicking off year 5. And, you know, I know you and Guy never stop trying to figure out how to fund the horn.
I'm hoping maybe some of those conversations can take place when we're in D.C., by the way, Michael. You know, we go because we want to bring these events along, but, you know, also we want to... There is a value to being seen. I hate to say it, but there is a value to being seen.
Sure. And then, yeah, good luck with that, definitely. I'll definitely tune in to check out how that goes when you guys are in D.C. Should be exciting. So I know you guys always work tirelessly on the fund, you know, trying to secure funds for the horn to keep it going. David mentioned earlier the horn auctions. That he's trying to set up. But, I suggested yesterday, you know, just something really, really easy that everybody can do. You know, just about everybody, I would think. I understand there's a few people that can't give anything. I understand when you just, every last penny goes to keep the lights on or to, you know, put food on your family. But I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that are going to spend $5 on something stupid this week. Or if not this week, just wait till this weekend. Saturday on the horn's birthday. Saturday, this weekend, you'll spend $5 on something stupid. I know you will. So I'm talking to everybody. That, you know, if you already contribute, go ahead, put in another $5. But I'm more talking to people who never have. You know who you are. You know you can, if you can.
Yeah, and frankly, although, again, once again, I did it to you again, and I got to you late, Michael.
That's okay.
But just to put not too fine a point on this, Guy and I make these trips, and we do so at financial hazard, shall we say. And
right.
So for us to be planning to make this trip, I'll be leaving here a week from tomorrow. To be in D.C. for the 29th. For us to do this is a bit of a leap of faith, if such a thing can be mentioned on this network and on this program.
And there, you know, there's a leap of faith involved that we will, you know, because one of the things that's going to be coming out of our mouths is, you know, we're not a fly-by-night operation. We have been through thick and thin. We're here, and we're going to stay. Others have gone by the wayside since we started. This is real. And, you know, all we need is to let people know we're here because we put out good product. So it's a great idea, Michael, and I thank you very much.
Can I just make it real clear?
Yeah.
I'm talking to everybody. If you've never put anything in the bucket, if you're listening live, if you're a podcaster, if you're listening to the rerun stream, I'm talking to you. If you just do it just this once, everybody just put in $5, send it in the mail, or do it via PayPal, whatever. If you're listening on iTunes or White Rose, real easy, just go to headonradionetwork.com/contribute, and you got the snail mail address and the PayPal's right there. Just even if you just do it just this once, you know, just to give the horn a big boost into to kick off year 5, just put in an extra 5 or put in your first 5.
Thanks, Michael. Got to roll, brother.
Yeah, have a good evening.
You too. Bye. Kid A from the chat room, otherwise known as Michael, calling from Ohio. And it is time for us to roll on out of here. Tomorrow night, of course, will be prayer meeting night. We've got a lead story that Maura provided to us. And, it's a hair puller. So we'll get going with that. Thanks to everybody who makes this happen. Financially, and with your time, with your energy, with your thoughts, with your calls, your emails, your participation in the chat room. Thanks. Thanks to John Fox, to Peter Godbold, to Ben Birch. Thanks to Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. The hardest working, bravest people I know. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
Cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy!
Hey, and welcome to Tuesday. About a minute and a half past the hour as we begin this Tuesday night edition of The Horn. The Horn having kicked off earlier with Guy James at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, and how good it was. to have Guy back. Miss him when he's gone, and the horn is so much better when he's here. No getting around it. Welcome back, Guy. I know you were missed, and I know you missed being behind the mic. So, today being any day, I want a reminder. Yeah, there we go. Guy and I will be live from Washington, D.C. on October the 29th, broadcasting the proceedings of a one-day conference hosted by the Campaign for America's Future. And we will bring all the discussion live. And then a special, two-man roadshow that afternoon, we hope. That's the plan. That's the 29th of October, live, the horn, on the road from Washington, D.C. I look forward to every opportunity I get to work with Guy James. When you get to work with a pro, you know you've worked with a pro, and you relish the opportunity. That's really what it boils down to. So that's that'll be on us quick. That's a week from Thursday. It will, of course, be brought to you in part by Coal River Mountain Watch. So be on board for that. Special afternoon broadcast Thursday afternoon. All day Thursday, really. All day Thursday from Washington, D.C. Where to go? How about we start out with a little bit of humor? You know, if you were listening to the program last night, you heard our good friend Lorella Scarborough talking about the meeting with Governor Joe Manchin of West Virginia yesterday, in which he he's renamed the state. Damned if he hasn't. He really, really has. You know, our flag says Montani, Semper, Liberi, Mountaineers are always free. Not so much. But more than that, you know, almost heaven, West Virginia was on, or it used to be wild, wonderful West Virginia. Wild, wonderful West Virginia on our license plates and on the signs coming into the state. When Joe Manchin took over, he changed that on all the state signs coming into the state. West Virginia, open for business. And now, as of yesterday, he has declared that we are no longer the mountain state. We are the extraction state. So some of us started brainstorming earlier, and you are welcome to jump in on the fun. Rory McElmoyle sent along something that had been sent to him earlier today that I got to look at. And it was an image of a proposed bumper sticker just to sort of drive this point home of exactly what... of what a mockery Governor Manchin has made of West Virginia. And it was West Virginia, the extraction state. And that got me thinking, as you know I am wont to do. And just sort of... brainstorming based on that extraction state bumper sticker, the original bumper sticker, I'm looking for it now. The original bumper sticker said, "Welcome to West Virginia, the extraction state," and showed a photograph of a mountain being blown up. But that then got my brain going, and I started thinking, you're sitting in the movie theater and they get ready to play all the trailers and it says coming attractions? Well, in West Virginia, it's coming extractions. Or maybe we could double up on what Joe did with the wild, wonderful West Virginia and make it the extraction state is open for business.